Blog Talk Radio.
You know who you are if you don't know me by now. Now, that is such a great start to this rainy, cloudy Friday afternoon. How appropriate in Charlotte, North Carolina, this March 28, 2014, and this is The Last Word with Michael Lawson and my sidekick. And what's your name? My sidekick, Blake. And who are you, Blake? Who are you? I just pulled you off the street. What do you know anybody here? Who do you know?
You.
How do you know me?
Because you're my grandpa.
Oh, I did not know that. So you're filling in for Thomas until Thomas gets here, huh? Oh, that's good. So we're going to have a the junior perspective on what's going on today. Let's see. he will be slightly late, but I'm sure you can figure in and fill in all the questions I have to ask, right? Okay, you're not shy. You Don't act like you're shy now. You're never
I'm
shy.
I'm not shy.
Oh, okay, good. Just before we came on the air, the big man, not in stature, in width, from Jersey, is at a press conference. And guess who just resigned? Samson from the Port Authority. Oh, gee, I'm 74 years old, and I think it's time for me. This is about the right time. Yes, with the Fed breathing down your butt, it is the right time. Because let's don't talk about conflicts of interest here. This man's got more conflicts than a daggone spider web. Anyway, yes, Samson resigned. David Samson of the Port Authority, the chairman of the Port Authority, appointed by you-know-who, the big guy himself, Christie. Anyway, the Pillsbury Doughboy is still doing his conference right now. It's been about 42 minutes or so, 40 minutes. And he's saying, the facts are the facts. Read the report. It eliminates me. I had nothing to do with nothing. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't ask any questions. Because if I ask questions, then they say I was trying to impede an investigation on the state, local, and federal levels. After all, I am a former prosecutor. That's right. And I know. I mean, just like he's saying, just listen to this.
Had no contact with David Wildstein in a long time. A long time. Well before the election. You know, I could probably count on one hand the number of conversations I've had with David since he worked at the Port Authority. I did not interact with David. If David would be here for a meeting in the State House and I ran into him, we'd say hello, how's your family, we'd chat. We didn't have that kind of relationship.
We didn't have that kind of relationship. He was only working for me. I only hired him. I only saw him on September 11th at the Port Authority, at the World Trade Center Memorial. The lanes were only shut down for 2 days already. David Wasey says, he told me. He didn't tell me. I have no recollection. Oh, that's that word, recollection. That means I could have, but I don't remember. It's possible, but maybe it wasn't said to me. That's called lawyer jargon bull. This is, oh, by the way, and Samson's resigning immediately. Saying, can somebody take that man's passport away? See, 74 years old, 30 years. He'd be 104 when he gets out, if he gets out. I mean, these politicians, this is a, and then Christy used the excuse, oh, I know, I don't know if I want to go into this yet because, Blake, you don't know too much about Chris Christie. You said that he likes donuts, right? Okay. So we'll continue this soiree into Chris Christie and Bridgegate questions a little bit when Thomas gets here. But just remember, Christie, Cannon, you two guys out in California, all the other people that are going to be wheeled in the dragnet in Jersey and in Charlotte, North Carolina, and maybe the state of North Carolina, just remember what Francis Scott Key Fitzgerald said. There are no second acts in American life. That's our key today. Remember that. All through all the discussion we have today. There's no second acts. So just remember that. We're also going to be talking to Robbie Wells, who's a candidate, Democratic candidate, for Well, President of the United States. You said you wanted to say something there?
Yes.
What?
Chris Christie said down the Washington Bridge.
No, you, George Washington. That's right. George, how you know that?
I heard it on TV.
Is that right? Was it Chris Christie or was it Bridget Kelly? Or both? Or David Sampson? Or Wildstein? See, they're all involved in this charade. Charade for you people living on the in the village. But anyway, thank you. Anything else you know about that you want to say about the bridge?
I think Art Kelly.
Art Kelly? What did Art Kelly have to do with this?
He said it.
I said it? Art Kelly? What did I say about Art Kelly?
I just heard you say it.
Oh, well, I don't know. I must have been losing my mind when I said that. I don't remember that. But that's okay. You watch TV. Thank you. I'll call you if I got some more questions, okay?
Okay.
All right. So, hey, I want to give everybody this address. I'm going to put it on my website. I have not been on the website, updating my website. I'm sorry, for over a month, because I have been so busy. I was sick. Then I got sick again. I was sick for the last week. I didn't know if I was going to be on the show today. But last week it was my fault, ladies and gentlemen, why you could not pick up the show, because when I first put the show together, I put it on in the studio, and I keep it on private until I get everything I want in it, because I don't want everybody to see what I'm doing while I'm doing it. And I left it on private. I'm sorry. So you didn't get the show. But here's something that I didn't know you could do. If you go to blogtalkradio.com/the-last-word-with-michael-lawson, you can get it immediately. You can get the show immediately. So it'll be immediately up with that. And I'll repeat that two or three additional times during the show, so you can get it. And I'm also going to put it on my website, and so everybody can get the show. There is a we're going to be talking about, as I said, I just got a call before the show started from Kim Grimes, could not be with us today. But we are going to have, as I said, Robbie Wells, who's a 2016 candidate for the Democratic Party so far, the first one to announce that he's going to run for president of the United States. We also have we're going to have the chairman of the North Carolina Democratic Party, Randy Vola, on. And I'm hoping to have David Adams on. If David needs no invitation, he can come on anytime he wants. And if you want to go to the website, the new website that I have is www.michaellawsonlastword.com. All one word. www.michaellawsonlastword.com. Check it out. I think the site is coming along. It's being built more and more. And when I get some time, I'm hoping this weekend I am going to get it as up to date as possible. Let's see what else we have. We're going to be talking to. We're going to be talking about, GM. We're going to be talking about GM. Has anybody heard about what the motor company has done, what they're involved with? Unbelievable. I cannot believe what GM is involved with. They're involved in the middle of a major, major, major lawsuit. And it seems as though they have been, trying to hide the truth about some problems they've been having with the ignition key in the ignition while you're driving. And the keys, some people, you know, have all these 25, 30 keys like I do on my key ring. Well, I believe it's the Cobalt. When you put the ignition key into the key, into the ignition, and you're driving, sometimes if your knee hits the long keys on the key ring, it can slip the ignition in that's in with the key ring or with the key out of the on position and into auxiliary because of the weight of the keys. And when it does that, you lose power steering, power brakes, and airbags, therefore losing control of the car. There are some, I believe, 13 deaths. I'm going to go back over that. Don't quote me on that yet. But when I get to that portion of the show, we will go into that deeply. But there have been at least 13 injuries. But they said there's a lot more that people did not know why it happened. And one of the major law firms that takes care of class action suits, Grant Eisenhofer and the National Coalition of the Major Trial Firms, are bringing a class action lawsuit against General Motors over the defective key systems. So they thought that maybe they could get around this. See, today's action was bought by 13 GM customers who bought and leased its cars in a number of states, including California, Arkansas, Georgia, Illinois, Louisiana, Missouri, Texas, and Vermont. More plaintiffs are expected to join the suit, which covers a variety of GM cars for model years ranging from the 2003 to 2010. So, ladies and gentlemen, that's something we're also going to be talking about. And I'm going to make some comparisons because there was something that went on years ago that was very similar. Either the Yetzel or the Comet, I can't remember offhand. But we're going to make some other comparisons about that. There are also a... what else are we going to talk? We're going to be talking about, this nut job from Georgia, I believe his name is, Bill Cassidy, who claims that the uneducated, people who can't read, have a hard time enrolling in Obamacare because the forms are too complicated. That's why there's not many people signing up. And that's why we need to get rid of Obamacare. Now, let me understand this. And he's a doctor. This man's a doctor. Does everybody getting the picture here? Just because you have a doctor, could be your gynecologist, it could be your dentist, your medical doctor, your regular MD. They don't give them brains. They just memorize stuff to take a test. They're just as dumb as everybody else. Here's the problem. We just look at him. We got the guy who is the head of Johns Hopkins, black doctor who is the head of Johns Hopkins. And this man talks about that President Obama is a communist. That President Obama has no right being the president of the United States because he is a communist and a fascist, and that Obamacare is going to kill people. This is what this man is saying. Obamacare is going to kill people. Now, I mean, you know, what do you do with someone like that? What do you do with someone like that? I mean, it's incredible. That's the only thing I can say. It's just incredible. And what makes it more, he was head, I believe, it's on oncology for the Children's Hospital. We have the head of science in the House of Representatives, the head of science, the Committee on Science. He is the head, and he says, he's a doctor, he says that every single thing I learned, everything that I learned as a doctor were lies from the pit of hell. Just listen.
But God's word is true. I've come to understand that. All that stuff I was taught about evolution and embryology and Big Bang theory, all that is lies straight from the pit of hell. And it's lies to try to keep me and all the folks who are taught that from understanding that they need a Savior. You see, there are a lot of scientific data that I found out as a scientist that actually show that this is really a young Earth. I don't believe that Earth is but about 9,000 years old. I believe it was created in 6 days as we know them. That's what the Bible says. And what I've come to learn is that it's the manufacturer's handbook is what I call it. It teaches us how to run our lives individually, how to run our families, how to run our churches. But it teaches us how to run all of public policy and everything in society. And that's the reason is your congressman, I hold the Holy Bible as being the major directions to me of how I vote in Washington, D.C., and I'll continue to do that.
Now, this man says it's 6,000 years old. Okay, so now we have to go to the cosmos. And we have to speak to the one who is the head of the Hayden Planetarium, Dr. Neil deGrasse. I mean, are we going to say that this guy has no idea what he is talking about? This man who we have put in front of everyone, Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson, who doesn't know anything, who has come on with the new cosmos straight from his mentor, who started the original series Carl Sagan. He, as the director of the Hayden Planetarium, is full of stars. Here's a man that has more titles than every single doctor in the U.S. Senate. All those morons put together, he has more brains than they have in their thumb. Can they go on and tell him he does not know what he's talking about? Because you just heard Braun. He has no proof of anything he said. Not one single shred of proof. But we can prove how old rocks are. Rocks on this planet are 300 million years old and older. Meteors coming from outer space are a billion years old or older. But we got these morons telling us near the grass is full of stars. He has no idea what he's talking about. Because everything I learned when I was in college are lies from the pit of hell. You can say, well, you know, that's only one guy. But you have doctors in both houses saying this. And why? Because the people they are talking to are the people that can't read. This guy, Cassidy, who's a doctor, who says that the people who are taking, who are listening to Obamacare can't read. So therefore, they shouldn't get Obamacare. But isn't this the people or some of the people that we have to make sure have Obamacare? Because they will not be able to afford to have health care because they won't make enough money in this society to buy health care? Isn't this the people that we are supposed to be looking out for? Aren't we supposed to be looking out for those that don't have much and those that may not have anything ever? Aren't we supposed to protect those that don't have much? Isn't that what God said? So why is it every time this president wants to protect those that don't have much and help those that don't have much, they say that he's a communist or fascist and both? It shows you the discrepancy in what they're saying. This is what this guy, Cassidy, said. As a doctor, I can tell you that you need an honest diagnosis before you can provide the needed treatment. It is self-evident to anyone who has worked uninsured, as I have for decades, that the uninsured come from all segments of society. This includes more or less educated. That's exactly my point I make. If we to be truly compassionate, our policies must meet people where they are. Obamacare's one-size-fits-all model lacks that measure of compassion. What is this man talking about? I mean, it is so convoluted what he just said and what I just read that it makes no sense at all. One size does fit all when everybody is treated fairly. Everybody. If you're a billionaire, if you're treated the same way as the person that makes $7.25 an hour, or $5.25 an hour. Now, if you just happen to have more money, then that's a different story. Then go about your business and get as much as you can. But those who don't have the money should not be treated like a doormat. And the problem is these so-called billionaire people, they want everybody to be treated as a doormat. Because they want rich and they want poor. They don't want nothing in between where you could ever get and challenge them for their money. This is the problem. They don't want to be challenged for anything that they have. Because if you're poor and destitute and living from hand to mouth every single day, you don't have the time to challenge them. That's all. This is all. You don't have time to challenge them. And that's what these people want to have this society be. They want it just like it was when the Romans controlled. There was no middle class. You're either rich or you're poor. Now, of course, there was poor, poor, poor that lived on the street. And there were some people that lived in the houses. So there was a difference there. But every one of us, listening to Rush Limbaugh the other day, he doesn't have health insurance. You know why? Because when you have his money, you don't need to have money coming out of your account every month or every quarter or every 6 months. And he knows daggone well if he had health insurance, it would go up like yours and mine, because people who don't have health insurance go to the emergency room, and when they go to the emergency room, that makes your health insurance go up because somebody has to pay for it. And 80 or 70% of the hospitals in this country today are controlled by the insurance companies and the drug companies. So you can bet your last dollar that they're going to pass it off on somebody that's got a premium. I was sick last week. After the show, I felt fine, but I felt a little rumbling about 10 o'clock in my stomach. Saturday morning, oh, forget it. I was heaving, you name it, I was doing it for 7 straight hours from 8 o'clock in the morning on, 7:30 in the morning on. I finally had to go to the hospital. Wife made me go. She was sick too, but not quite as bad. She was over it like 2 or 3 o'clock. I mean, still felt a little nauseous, but not like me. And it was not going to stop. I mean, there was nothing else coming up. I was just doing heaving. One of my daughters took me to the hospital emergency room. They had to give me a liter of fluids. I'm just waiting to see what that's going to cost. Of course, I have insurance, so it's going to pay for it. But I'm still going to be able to see the bill. And as soon as I get the bill, I'm going to let everybody know what that bill was. Because, you see, they got to give you whatever they paid your insurance company, they got to give you a receipt. So let's just see what it costs to go in, get a liter of fluids and nausea medicine. To go, first of all, to sign in, go into the room, have them verify all your information, sit down, and it was very quick, too. I was surprised. There's a new hospital over here, and somebody's got to pay for it. The new hospital over here, University Hospital. I had about 7 people ahead of me. I was in on the table getting fluids in 45 minutes. And that was just close because my time to go was 45 minutes. So they got it right on time. So then the doctor came in. He says, oh, we checked your bloods, blood work. That costs money. That's lab. He said everything was clear. It looks like we'll get about 6 or 8 or 10 of these a week. There's a vicious bug going around. But I have not been able. I had something to eat yesterday. I think it was the first time I really ate something pretty good. I have not been back to my normal gluttony self, eating everything there was in front of me. Food, just I taste a little bit, and I just get nauseous. I've been drinking, but that's about it. No, not alcohol, Smarty. I have been drinking regular liquids, water, and juices. Water. Did you hear me, everybody? Water. I've been drinking it. Okay, so don't text me. You been drinking water? Yes, I've been drinking water. The doctor told me to make sure I drank some 18 ounces or 16 ounces, 24 ounces, whatever it is, of the Gatorade. Couldn't stand. But you know what? I just tried that Gatorade again. So they must have changed the flavor, because I couldn't stand that stuff before. Even when I was playing ball, couldn't stand that stuff. But, hey, it's changed. So I drank that, drinking fluids. And but today I just had, because my grandson was over here early in the morning, and I fixed some pancakes, waffles, and bacon, and I had coffee, and he ate his, I ate mine. Half hour later, I felt nauseous again, full. I can't eat another thing. So it's still in me. The doctor said, I saw my doctor yesterday, Wednesday, and he said, it's going to take a few days because you had it pretty bad. So your stomach is going to feel nauseous. So I got some nauseous medicine that I'm going to take down that he prescribed for me. I'll take that. But anyway, getting back to what it's going to cost. It's going to cost. Now, who the heck do you think is paying for that doctor's visit in the emergency room? Well, I'm paying for it because I have the insurance. But what if it wasn't somebody that had insurance? What if it wasn't someone who had insurance? What do you think they would be paying? Nothing. We'd be paying. It'd go up on our insurance. So, but we're going to get more into that also. And then I got to tell you, because we're going to talk, and I can't forget about my, I had a long conversation with my doctor. I got to tell you about this. We're going to have another conversation about this next week when Grace, who's on her way out to Texas, take care of some business, her and her husband. Joe, hello, Joe. I hope you got the baby with you. No, baby's not flying, huh? Somebody's minding the baby. But Grace, she'll be with us next week with Joe, her husband. And we're going to talk about health insurance and how it's affecting us. Mr. Fortenberry is now here.
Yes, sir.
And let me see. Did I hear you? Say it again. Did I hear you?
How are you on this rainy, rainy day?
Well, I guess I'm hearing you now.
That took forever.
Yeah, well, it's raining outside now. But, we have, going back to what we're going to talk about, David Sampson resigned, huh?
Yeah, I heard that. Took long enough. I mean, you know, I guess the scandal continues to spin.
The scandal continues to spin.
Yeah. You know what's funny? Have you ever noticed that when a Democrat gets in trouble, like, say, our mayor, he was gone in about 8 hours, right?
Yes.
And within 24, he's already resigned. They're already talking about the replacements. They're all already have issued orders to all the clerks in the entire county. You know, everything is already rolling over to the next thing. And when a Republican messes up, months go by.
They mess up?
Years go
by. But
up,
they don't ever mess up.
Nothing ever happens.
Of course not, because they don't ever mess
it's
up.
It's like investigations and, you know, we're going to hire more lawyers and we're going to block more investigations and then we're going to investigate the block investigation. It just never seems to ever do anything. You know,
well,
just kind of disappointing.
David Sampson, according to Krispy Kreme Christie.
Oh, he was just old.
He said, yes. He said, I'm 74.
Yeah, I need to retire.
I don't have time, you know. He said, and I was going to do this anyway.
Right. That's what I'm
saying.
He said,
I was going
to.
We've been talking about this for years.
Now,
but Hey, but if I have the line up here where I can repeat it, he says, I thought now was the good time.
I bet.
Immediately.
Yeah, yeah.
He says immediately he resigned.
Because as he was giving that statement, I think now is a good time. Probably in the background was like this. Yeah, please, open up. No, this is a peanut for your own.
Well, listen, I don't want to get too down that rabbit hole yet because we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But what I want...
That's a tunnel. Going to New Jersey.
Going to Jersey, yes.
And by the way, how many times I've been to New York and I had to go through cones? Now I'm wondering all those times.
No, in New York.
Was it real or was
and
it
no,
time?
When you go through and you got to be bypassed because of cones in New York is because that pothole, which is bigger than your car, you're going to drop it.
Exactly.
It wasn't because the bridge was closed.
That was the thing about, we used to accuse them up in Baltimore when we lived there. They had the ring road around the city or whatever, and all they did was drive those asphalt machines around in a circle year round. Because by the time they got around, all the holes were back open again, and we used to tell them that they were actually making the hole. That's all they did. They chewed up the pavement, you know.
Yeah, there is there was a movie back in early 90s, let me get it up here for you. There was a movie, and it's called
Home Alone?
No.
Sorry, maybe that's 80s.
It was 1991. Gene Hackman and Mary Elizabeth Mastriano, called Class Action.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that movie?
I do.
A great film, because if you want to see and hear how, and I'm talking about the criminal element in white-collar crime, so they call it criminal element in white-collar crime, because they don't always use a gun in white-collar crime.
Right.
They have something that create kills you.
Well, you know how I knew that was a good movie back in those days?
Right.
You remember back in the 80s, even in the 70s, there was this young actor making his way through Hollywood.
Oh, yes.
Like a badass. I mean, he was just breaking doors down. But in popular films, he was still called Larry.
Oh, yeah, Larry.
But in classy films, films that were of a higher order, like this one, he was called
Lawrence.
And that's how I knew it was a good film.
Well,
he was billed as Lawrence Fishburne in that one.
Yes, he was billed as Lawrence.
Because it's kind of like a Shakespeare role. You know, he's suddenly Lawrence.
That's right. And if I can get this up here, well, anyway, the film centers around it's a family affair. You know, I don't understand why I don't have it. And I thought I had it. It centers around
the automobile, the all those industry accidents.
Yeah.
Automobile industry.
Well, yeah, anyway, what happened was that Gene Hackman is a trial lawyer,
mm-hmm,
that does a lot of class action lawsuits. His daughter, she works for one of the major, major law firms. And this major law firm has part of its people they represent is called Argo Motors.
Mm-hmm.
So it so happened that about 15 years prior to that, Argo Motors had a car called the Meridian. that was involved in a few accidents, more than a few accidents.
Right. And by the way, for those who
yes.
want to know the factual origins of fiction, look up your pinto beans, and you'll find some analogy.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Anyway, this film is modeled after a real life as, and it is.
Every once in a while, people come out with a car. I mean, people as in, you know, the corporations, but we call them people now because of the ruling. So people come out with cars every once in a while that have a defect. Oops. Who would have thought? Like, you know, recently Toyota. They the car was supposed to start and not wreck. You know. But so they come out with these things, and then when people get hurt, and someone finds out that they're all have a flaw, people want to, you know, do things crazy like sue people.
Well,
you've got a defective product. So that's not nice for these.
But you see, the problem is the car isn't just sitting in your park in your driveway and says, I got a flaw. No, it don't happen like that. Would you just listen? This is from a clip from the film.
How fast is that traffic getting?
30 miles an hour. 30 miles an hour.
That's amazing. It's amazing. Isn't that amazing, Maggie? All that damage from just going 30?
Yeah, well, there's going to be damage until we can figure out a way to make cars bounce.
You test every model this way?
Every model, every year.
Really?
Vince, say we got to. Of course, this is only one test. You know, we do 77 others. Well, don't want no surprises.
Huh?
You know, that's what gets my goat about this damn lawsuit. What you got here is just about the safest damn car on the road.
You'll say that on the stand?
Oh, hell yes. But don't stop with me.
What's this?
Radiant performance charts. The 85 model exceeded every federal standard that year. Plus.
Plus?
Plus Rowena.
Who's Rowena?
Not who, what. An independent research facility. The car passed every test.
Now, here's the thing. The story, and we're going to get to why we're leading while we're talking about this in this film, the connection with GM. Mm-hmm. But 30 miles an hour, and the car's completely destroyed. Okay? But, hey, you know, they're not built like they used to.
Kind of like
same material.
When you have your new phone and you drop it on the...
Right, it goes to three
and
pieces.
Corner and
right.
It all shattered.
Right, all shattered.
Yeah, it was a weak corner.
Right, it was a weak corner. What they're saying is, oh, yeah, but, hey, this is the safest car on the road. Why? Because we passed every single test of that year. Mm-hmm. Test that they gave it.
Yeah, right.
So, but don't worry about that. It is backed by this report that they cited, that they created. Almost like the report that Christie came out with yesterday.
Right, with that little...
Same thing!
What was his name? The attorney? The maestro?
The maestro!
Yeah.
Who works with Giuliani.
Yeah.
Who works with David Sampson. Who works with Christie.
Hey!
Keep it in the family. And they say that it was the best car made, no defects.
Mm-hmm. Bridge had the best cones ever laid out.
Ever laid out.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
See, this is the way the Fox News and everybody else works when they cite themselves and then just say, an expert said.
Expert. Who's expert? Oh, well, he's our expert, but he's an expert.
And he's right over here at the desk.
Right.
We're quoting him, so
right.
He's from on high.
Well,
you know.
Now.
But, yeah, so this guy, what's his name? His real name is,
Well, I don't want to get to that yet. I don't get to that yet. We're going to go through down this.
Randy Master. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Maestro. Maestro.
Maestro. M-A-S-T-R-O. It's like Maestro or something. The Maestro.
That's what he is. That's what he's called. Randy Maestro. Randy Maestro. Anyway, the thing is that in this film, Maggie, who is the daughter of Gene Hackman, mm-hmm. and is working. See, she has a very bad relationship with her father, and they're going to be opposite one another on the case. Father for the plaintiffs, which are all the families, and she's for the car company. So this is her first major case. So she's digging through every single thing that ever was done on this, and she found a letter that said, and of course everybody recognized Dr. Getchell. That was Fred Thompson, former Senator Fred Thompson, wanted to be president until they asked him a question, and he said, right. Anyway, Dr. Getchell, at the time when this car, the Meridian, was made, was the head of engineering, the electrical engineering. He designed all the circuits. So Maggie is going through the file, and she sees a letter from the then president of the company to Dr. Getchell, Fred Thompson, thanking him for keeping the problem in-house and for not letting Pavel say what he needed to say. Mm-hmm. And he got a recommendation. Recommendation is he's now the president of the company 15 years later.
Yep.
All right. So she asked this very simple question. She says, keeping what in house?
Right.
So she says, I want to speak to this guy, Pavel.
Yeah.
Okay?
Like maybe the car falls apart.
Yeah. So Pavel now is retired, old guy. He's almost senile. I can't remember anything. He runs a bunny farm. Rabbits. So she goes out to see him. She goes out to see him. And she says, Dr. Pavel, can I speak to you? My law office told you I was coming out. And this is what happened.
Hello, this is the administrator. I'd like to talk to you about some research you did while you were working at Argo on the Meridian.
What's Meridian?
A car. You did extensive research on this electrical system. It was Project 0243.
Zero. I'm no longer good with numbers.
It was a 1985 model station wagon, and you said there were problems with it.
Charge.
Excuse me?
That's what I call it. The depth charge.
Depth charge, sir, is
You want to know about the circuits?
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, I saved that ass on that one.
Really? How?
Well, there was this guy. Hillbilly.
Hillbilly?
What's his name?
You mean Getchell? George Getchell?
That's the one. Getchell. That's
the name. He was your supervisor for 16 years.
Just testing. Did you know that? What's his name? Designed that circuit, and I was supposed to test it.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, Alexander Pavel, leave it alone. We've already tooled up for it on the assembly line. The circuit is okay. That's what he said. But I'm a scientist. I tested anyway on my own. You see, it was okay. Until I started hitting the car when the left turn signal was flashing. And then
It blew up. The Meridian blew up?
Yeah. You see, where there is an impact of metal on metal, in this area, the devices are maybe 50, 75 centimeters apart. Now, if there is an arc in the flow of the circuit,
yeah.
just as it's penetrating the electric fuel pump, and the gas tank will blow up. It's just a simple chain reaction.
So what you're saying is that if the car is hit from the rear when the left turn signal is functioning, it just might blow up.
Correct.
The report, when you filed this report, did you give a copy to Getchell?
To the company.
May I see another copy?
No, the company has it, of course.
Company is everything.
Yep. Except my notes.
You do have notes?
Of course.
May I see those, please?
No.
No.
If you want my notes, you need to go to Ireland about sugar.
Okay, so she now finds out that this car had a major problem with it.
Right.
So, what does Maggie do? What does Maggie do? Maggie goes to, of course, Dr. Getchell. Mm-hmm. This is Dr. Getchell. Do you remember Pavel, Alexander Pavel? This is what Dr. Getchell said.
Mr. Getchell is returning your call.
Oh, it's our good buddy from Argo.
Dr. Getchell.
Ms. Ward, how are you today?
Yes, I'm fine, sir. How would you like to discuss Alexander Pavel?
Alexander Pavel is a senile old fool.
So you didn't take his advice on the blinker circuit?
I decided his test results were inconclusive and communicated that fact to Mr. Flannery, the chief executive officer at the time.
People were blown up, sir.
We change that light in the next model year.
I suggest you get yourself an attorney, Dr. Getchell.
I've already talked to one. It was right at the time the report came out. He said we had nothing to worry about.
Well, what idiot told you that?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, he's your boss, Michael Grazer.
So all right. So to give you this, everybody, you got to see this story. But the whole thing starts out that Michael Flannery, her direct supervisor, her boss, they are sleeping together. And when she told Maggie, told her father that she was going to be on this case and asked her father to give it to some other group to handle it. The father says no. She said why? He said because I have the case now. She said. He said, well, you know the reason why they have it is because they figured that I'd look over at you and roll my eyes and cry and just let you have the case. He said, ain't going to happen. She says, no, they did it because I could beat you. And he says, maybe 20 years from now, but not now.
Yeah.
He said, Flattery and Quinn spit out baby lawyers like you. They threw you in there because they thought it would hurt me. Because they got a problem with this case. That's why they put you on your first major case against me. There's something wrong with that. Don't you see that? She didn't believe it.
Right.
Now she sees it.
Yeah.
And she confronts her boyfriend, boss. And he says, come on, honey. And she knew right then what was going on. Anyway, what to say is that these people have this problem. These companies have this problem about how they handle information and how information is handled. And there's one last thing that we need to talk about here.
Is
I can find
Republicans have gotten very good at.
Oh yes.
Having dual laptops and things like that, so that there's a official record, and then there's the work computer. Because you don't want that paper trail like they used to.
You don't want that paper trail. Now, let's see if I have both of them here. I don't know. Let's see if this is the one here. I don't remember, to tell you the truth. Let's see. Okay. Let's see if this is it. Now, there's a I want to play these, so this is a definitely. Let's see, did I just play this? Is it one I just played? No. Okay, no, that's not it. Now, there is a problem here. If I can find it, I can pull it up. Oh, and then where the heck is that? I don't see it here. So maybe it didn't come up. I don't know if it did come up. One of the things that she goes and mentions to the people on the she has a meeting with Flannery, her boss, and Getchell. And she asks a very simple question. Why wasn't the circuit board just changed?
It was changed the next year.
Well, that's what he said. It was changed the next year. And
a few people die along the way.
Well, there's a reason for that. And, well, you know, even though a few people die along the way, you're absolutely correct. But there's a reason behind that, why people may have died, and if I get to it, I can tell you
it's stuck in traffic.
I can't find it, and it's here somewhere.
It's stuck on the Jersey Turnpike.
It's stuck on the Jersey Turnpike. Well, we're getting to that. But anyway, the thing about this whole why it wasn't able to. And I think that maybe that's the reason why, because I didn't put it in the EQ.
Well, part of the overall problem is this.
I'll get this.
And,
go ahead.
They pointed out the coziness, the relationships. You know, everybody knows everybody, and everybody covers everybody's back. And, you know, even when you get to the lawyers and the judges and everything else in these cases, often they're your partners or your friends, or
yes,
you
thanks.
Paid for their campaign. Whatever, and they're beholden. And that's part of the problem with money in our politics. You know, when you have
money in the
something
politics.
Go wrong and you have an investigation or something that needs to occur, then it's compromised because everybody knows everybody and everybody's been paid by everybody. So it's hard to have an independent and, you know, neutral eye.
Well, the thing is that why, the question is, you know, everybody should answer that question, should want to know the question, why wouldn't we just change?
Just do the right thing.
Do the right thing. Change the circuit board so none of this. But remember, he said, well, we changed it the following year, right?
Right.
Isn't that what he said? We changed it the following year. Okay. You changed it the following year, but what happened to the cars that were already out there?
Right. Hey, recalls cost money, man. Have to pay those mechanics to change things and use a screwdriver and everything.
Use a screwdriver.
You know, that's a cost that the company might not want to.
What the heck happened to my – I can't see it on here. I don't know what happened with it. I'm still looking for it. I don't know what happened to it.
My guess.
I don't know what happened to it. I just put it on here. And it's not here yet, so I don't know. Let me look for it one more time.
More proof of Chris Christie. Right there.
So they have more proof of Chris Christie. I don't know if we'll ever know the motive. But that's something else that people need to understand. Yes, go ahead. Tell us about Chris Christie.
Something. This is not Chris Christie. I just want to read something for people to soak in their brain. This came from a president of ours, very famous president. Because he actually stood up to corporations and big money. You know, we're talking about people who won't even change a little blinker light on a car because it will cost a little bit of money, and they just rather scoot by and hope that nobody notices all the deaths are connected, you know. But that's profit over people. And so here's something from a century ago that lets you know.
Are we talking about Teddy Roosevelt?
Oh, we are indeed. Oh. Teddy is a Republican. People forget that.
Is he?
Teddy Roosevelt.
He's a Republican?
Yeah. But, you know, this is a trust-busting kind of guy. And he had this great quote that I just want to read and let y'all just let it marinate for a while, because I think it's pretty instructive. Because this was during a time when he was trying to push his reforms through.
Mm-hmm.
And I love this quote.
And what kind of reforms was he trying to push through?
Well, you know,
he was
breaking up all the conglomerations that were strangling America.
You mean the same ones that are doing it today?
Yeah, but, you know, we've deconstructed all of those antitrust laws that he pushed through. But while he was pushing that through, this is one of his quotes. I, again, recommend a law prohibiting all corporations from contributing to the campaign expenses of any political party. Let individuals contribute as they desire, but let us prohibit in an effective fashion all corporations from making contributions for any political purpose, whether directly or indirectly. Now, that's a warning from Theodore Roosevelt, and what I find alarming about that is not only is it just completely dead on accurate and true, as we can see today, about the corrupting influence of money, but it came from a Republican. And if you played that now for a Republican, they'd laugh you out of the room as they were stuffing wads of money into their pockets. And the Koch brothers.
There are some Democrats that have been doing that too lately.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're going to talk about one of them today. But I think, and that's exactly the point, same way with this fictitious Pinto being on a car, or Chris Christie.
Which is not fictitious.
Yeah.
Which was not fictitious.
Well, this movie version was. But these things are the direct influence of money in our system.
Absolutely.
All of these things, the corruption, it just erodes the justice system. It erodes our political system. It erodes our safety nets everywhere. And people always suffer. And I think it's not bad to say Republican or Democrat, take it out of every party. Never allow them to contribute. Let the voters contribute anything they want to do. But never let companies come in and buy elections, because this is what happens.
Well, I found it.
Finally. That was a long digression to cover.
I don't know why. I went over it three times. I rolled right past it. Anyway, so what we're doing is Maggie now goes back to the story, ladies and gentlemen. Maggie now goes back and has a conference with Dr. Getchell and Flannery, her boss, ex-lover now, or so he thinks, discussion about how they're going to proceed in court. And this is what goes on in the office of Dr. Getchell.
Methodology was state-of-the-art at the time, and that's what we went by.
Okay, George. We're through for today. You're still talking a little about the jury. Not that that would be difficult. Just keep it simple.
What the hell? I've never seen that damn report.
Makes two of us.
May I ask a question, please?
Sure.
Why didn't you just change the blinker circuit? It's just a question.
I told Flannery about the problem a month or so before he died. He called in his head bean counter.
What's a bean counter?
Risk management expert, right, George?
Yeah. So Flannery shows him the data and asks him how much it would cost to retrofit...
You mean recall?
There you go. To retrofit 175,000 units. You multiply that times $300 a car, give or take, you're looking at right around $50 million.
Mm-hmm.
So the risk guy, he crunches the numbers some more. He figures out you have one of those fireball collisions about every 3,000 cars. That's 158 explosions.
Which is almost exactly as many plaintiffs as there are.
These guys know their numbers.
multiply that times $200,000 per lawsuit. That's assuming everybody sues and wins. $30 million max. See? It's cheaper to deal with the lawsuits than it is to fix the blinker. It's what bean counters call a simple actuarial analysis.
Rest my case. Mm-hmm. In court.
Hey, money knows money. And when you get to, if that's the driving force, then hey, it saves money. I tell you, all of those screwdrivers and having to do every one of those little screws and take that whole little unit off and put in a new one, hey, that takes time and effort, Mike.
$50 million worth.
And, you know,
in this particular
case. What's a few grandmothers here or there?
What's a few people that were, you know, they're 75 years old, they got burnt up, couldn't get out of the car. Mm-hmm. You know, what was their life worth? Their life's not worth $100,000.
And you got to think, see, and the catcher there was, even if they all
win,
it still didn't amount to that.
That's right.
So imagine they probably get away with, you know, say only 10% of them win and 30% of them don't.
That's why you need to file a class action.
And
see?
On down the line.
That's right.
That's how they win every time.
Absolutely.
You got to look at just the cold, hard numbers.
And
this is the way companies think, and that's why I've always maintained corporations are not people. They don't die.
No.
They don't feel.
Oh, they don't feel.
And all they do is exist on being people or money.
To take.
If they have profit or not. And when you say then that they have rights and they can be heard in a, you know, political campaign and they can buy their view and everything else, like, well, wait a minute. They're not a person.
They're just like the Ferengi.
Okay.
What does the Ferengi say?
Ugly.
What does the Ferengi say? It's all about gold. That's it.
And stroke my ear on the way up.
Yeah, stroke my ear, right, on the way out, right. It's the Ferengi process.
Goodness.
That's what. Now, I went to this little bit of sojourn to bring us to the point of today's conversation, which I was trying to get a hold of the two people that wrote about this in the New York Times, and I forgot what the other one was, but I'm going to still try to get a hold of them for next week. GM is having a major problem now. It seems that they have something very similar going on. The cars exploding on impact.
Again, just like
not on impact, but cars exploding when they hit trees after their power steering
goes out. Yeah.
Their airbags don't deploy, and their power brakes go out.
Yeah. Hey, I'll tell you one. Here's a funny one. When our minivan got hit and took off the front of that, you remember that? My wife and I. We asked some questions. You know, we got hurt. Now, we had the belt zones, saved our lives. But no airbags, even one.
No airbags.
And we asked, hey, why didn't airbags deploy? Because, you know, the lady hit us like 6 miles an hour in front of the car, took the whole front of the car off, you know, and it broke our axle in half. That's how hard it hit, you know. And we're like, so why no airbags?
No airbags?
Oh, we figured you hit it just the right angle, and the sensor didn't deploy. We hit the right angle in front of the car, but it didn't deploy. And but they said, no reason to worry about that.
Yeah, please don't worry about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, we were too hurt and darned everything. We didn't push it, but ever since then, I was like, this is lying.
And what car was that?
Oh, that was one of those minivans that might
who makes it?
With a Chrysler or something.
Oh, Chrysler.
Anyway, it was just ironic because insurance companies and everything else were like, oh, no, that's fine. It's just because the angle of the impact they didn't deploy. Don't worry about it. They all told us, don't worry about it.
The insurance company says it?
They're like, don't worry about it. Just don't ask. Move along. Hey, do you need a massage with that?
Do you need an ear stroke like a Ferengi?
Can I acupressure? You'll forget all of
it. Right. Oh, never mind, you're going to forget about it anyway because your brain is suffering swelling and you're not going to remember anything that happened.
Yeah.
Just forget about it.
Only when I look to the left.
8 years ago, a 15-year-old daughter of Maggie Beskan the daughter of Maggie Baskin, Amy Radmaker, died in a Chevy Cobalt crash. Mm-hmm. One of the cars GM has now admitted has had problems with faulty ignition switch that shuts the power steering, brakes, and airbags down.
Mm-hmm.
You stick the key in the ignition, but, you know, like a lot of people that have, I don't have a, where's mine here? On my key, I got about 25 keys on my key ring. I have always tried to remember to take my keys, all those keys, and put them in my armrest so it's just my two keys in the steering wheel.
Right.
According to what they're saying now is that with this car, if you stuck the key in the ignition, start a car, drive down the road, mind your own business, and your knee happens to hit the keys dangling on the wrong angle, it could accidentally turn the ignition key into the auxiliary position. And on the auxiliary position, power steering, power brakes, and airbags do not work.
Can I read this
statement
right here?
Read that.
The automaker has confirmed this is at the post-bankruptcy. Now, I just want to, before we get into whether or not they're, you know, is it faulty? Yes. Did they correct it? Yes. But this is about the people who died during the interim, like we were just talking about. You know, should we correct it this year or next year?
Yes.
And this point in this little article you have from the LA Times here says, the automaker confirmed that the post-bankruptcy GM bears no liability for the accidents before its legal reinvention. And bankruptcy and product liability experts agree, you know, like that guy that works for that guy. As in many corporate bankruptcies, GM's legal slate was wiped clean.
Absolutely.
Oh, it's a magic eraser.
Now, here's the thing. This was the 2003-2010 year. They were going into bankruptcy 2007-2008 when Obama came through. He got them out, got them into bankruptcy. Everything was wiped clean. All liability accidents, all everything.
Let me explain how this works on this thing. The restructuring technically created a new company of the same name, which also got to bring the assets of the old GM over, but magically allowed it to shed its debts and legal liabilities. Let me repeat that. It has the same name, it's the same building, and it has the same money and assets, but it sheds all debts and legal liabilities.
Now, can individuals do that?
You're not a corporation, Michael. What are you talking about?
But I thought people were corporations.
No, corporations are people.
Oh.
People aren't corporations.
They're not?
No, you don't have protection.
Oh, man.
I hate to tell you, unlike a corporation, you'll also eventually die. Too bad. Sorry. Not a corporation.
And my name can't go on, because I have two girls. I have two girls, so you mean my name is not going to go on after me?
Too bad. Sorry. Hope it doesn't hurt much. And this is the part that just should, listeners, you should really love. Steve Jakubowski, or Jakubowski, if he pronounces it that way. He says, and he's the Chicago bankruptcy attorney, so he says, GM completely threw all product liability claimants under the bus. That's pretty clear. And he says, the bailout, ultimately, this is what I love. I just love this. The genius of corporations. The bailout, you know, that the taxpayers pay for. Bailout cost taxpayers $10.5 billion with a B.
But they paid it back now.
Bills.
They paid it back with interest. But I want to know one thing. How does that affect those people that died?
Did they pay back?
Yeah, they paid back $12 billion, I think. So no, wait a minute, no. They paid that back to federal government. They didn't pay mom and the children. They didn't pay what's the young lady, Maggie Baskin, Amy Radmaker's daughter who died in the car, and the other kids. There were some other kids who died in this car. GM has been absolved of all responsibility for crashes before the automaker's 2009 bankruptcy and federal bailout. That's despite the automaker's public apologies and its recall of 1.6 million vehicles to fix the ignition problems.
1.6
million.
Remember that little point about that?
Did the big guy say?
What's
the big guy say?
What
does it cost? 106, 135 million units?
Well, what
50 million
else? Is that you, the taxpayer, pay for the bankruptcy that absolves them of all liability. I call that a win-win for the corporate field. I mean, you pay for their bailout. They don't go under. They keep their assets, and they just leave all the liability laying on the floor. What? Ooh, wow. Ain't that fun?
Unbelievable.
It's almost like it's a, a corrupt system, a rigged system.
Rigged system. Yes, that's the word, rig system.
Here's another example of, let's play, you're not a corporation, Mike.
But I am.
You have student loans, say.
Oh.
You know, under the Reagan Bushes, when they restructured all educational debt, they made it permanent forever. You cannot escape it, even when you go into bankruptcy. Too bad. You go into bankruptcy, and they laugh. And they said, okay, and so next Tuesday, the check's in the mail.
Right.
And you can get sick, and then they'll go, hey, guess what? How was that degree? This place good? Your children can pay for it. You know. But that's because you're not a corporation. You didn't get to leave it lying on the floor when you declare bankruptcy. You just get to get up, cry, and then they'll take your stuff and say, your bill is still due next week.
The crash to kill Baskin's daughter and another teen, Natasha
Weigel,
took place in Wisconsin Road 2006. The ignition switch in the 2005 Chevy Cobalt driven by 70-year-old Maggie Phillips slipped out of the on position, shutting off the power steering, power brakes, airbags. Phillips then lost control of the car, striking telephone pole, junction box, and two trees. The airbags failed. The passengers were killed, and Phillips suffered lasting injuries. Now, I mean, is there a major tie between the fictional story class action and this? They knew. They knew. And their risk management people told them what the fact was. Mm-hmm. So they knew.
Well, why else would you get it written into bankruptcy that you can leave your liability on the floor?
Absolutely.
They had that. They said, let's just wipe our hands, you know. We're done.
So it wasn't just that they were losing money and needed. They wanted to go into bankruptcy to get out of this major suit.
And
what did Toyota do?
Side of this was the huge side were the workers. They also went into bankruptcy because that dissolved all their contracts.
That's right.
And they don't have to pay for those people who have spent their entire life devoted to the company. And then they go, oh, guess what? Your retirement package? I'm sorry, we're bankrupt. You get nothing.
Listen to this. Last week, Toyota Motor Company agreed to a Department of Justice settlement in which it admitted delaying recalls and misleading customers, regulators, and Congress about problems with sudden acceleration in their vehicles. The automaker paid a $1.2 billion fine to avoid further prosecution. Mm-hmm. The bankruptcy provide no immunity from criminal prosecution. That's what needs to be done. Mm-hmm. They need it. When these daggone heads of these companies, whether it's automotive or Hoover, mm-hmm. they need to be hit with personal criminal prosecution.
Yep.
And even if you're the head of the company and your man down there in engineering covers this up, you need to be blamed. Mm-hmm. Hey, what happens when you're a football team?
Right.
What happens when you're a baseball team and you don't get to the daggone World Series or the Super Bowl for 4 years? Your butt is fired. Forget, because you can't replace the whole team, mm-hmm. but you can replace your butt.
Now, these guys, they should be held responsible. They shouldn't be allowed to escape. And one thing, I'll give credit to our illustrious president who gets bashed every day. But his Justice Department has been aggressive. And if you've noticed, people paying attention, the last few years, we've seen a whole slew of record-breaking fines and settlements.
Absolutely.
And this was one of them. This $1.2 billion was the largest that ever had to pay. So, you know, that is proof positive that he's doing work. Now,
if they got $1.2 billion to pay, how much money did they make it?
Of course. I mean, that tells you right there. And that's just, and again, if you know, you can just go to the wall and your settlement pocket change pays all this, you know, you got to think of those bean counters like, hey, it was still worth it. So they obviously made so much money that even that was like, yeah, whatever, $1.2 billion.
Hey.
You know, we just made a trillion or whatever.
I mean, it's just incredible. Now, they have a...
But again, they should be held liable because it's not just that it's profit and that, you know, that was a good August for them or whatever. They need to be held liable for these deaths and for the lying and the cover-ups because that's what they've been doing.
It seems now the big dog coming in this, Grant, which I mentioned before, the star of the show, Grant and Eisenhofer and National Coalition of Major Trial Firms bringing a class action lawsuit against General Motors over the defective key. Now, they think, General Motors thinks they're out of the woods on this. But somehow, this law firm doesn't exactly think so. Congress and federal regulators over the last decade-long failure to correct faulty ignition switches on several of the major car brands, GM now faces a private class action lawsuit and is seeking economic recovery on behalf of nationwide claims for purchasing and or leasing vehicles they allege the company knew were defective. So this is another way to get at them.
Right.
Because I don't think it didn't say nothing about class action.
They've had to do a private
yes.
suit because the other is they settled with the government now, their investigations, you know, in Congress or whatever. But now the private sector can go after them. Because one of the things, if you remember above, it says bankruptcy doesn't provide immunity from criminal prosecution.
That's right.
So now you can go after them for
absolutely.
The again, it's all the they knew. It wasn't that it was a faulty product that you accidentally discovered. Oh, gee, you know, the chassis got a crack in it. That's an accident. This is, they knew this whole time, and they were covering it up.
And he says here that the plaintiffs argue mm-hmm. that GM was fully aware that the problems extended beyond just the ignition switch mechanism that had been the focus of the recall. According to the complaint, the company's engineering documents show that the defects also included the placement of the switch in the steering column and the lack of an adequate protection from normal incidental contact by the drivers. To fully remedy the problem and render the defective vehicle safe and the economic value to their own owners, again, additional design elements beyond the ignition switch are needed. The fact that GM has to date issued a partial recall, knowing that it's insufficient, underscores GM's ongoing fraudulent concealment and misrepresentation of the nature and the extent of the defects, and the complaint continues.
Mm-hmm.
They said they were saying
that
they should.
An example of how long this has been going on. You know when we lived
2003, ain't it?
Yeah, but you know when we lived.
Yeah.
In Lock Raven, that was up in Baltimore, whatever this place. Was.
Delta over there.
Delta, yeah.
Delta Crossing.
So we're in there. We had a Grand Am. Pontiac Grand Am. Remember that car?
Yeah.
Okay. Always had problems with it. It sometimes turn off. Sometimes it wouldn't crank. And then sometimes it would. You know, just like, it was like, I thought it was the weather for a long time. I was trying all these different things. Took it in there 1,000 times, and when you go in there, of course, it crank 900 times. Right, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. Then finally, about, I don't know, had that car for 2 or 3 years. They called me and said, oh, you need to come in. We need to change that. We found out it's a faulty ignition. It's something about the whole column assembly. And they went in. They had to take the whole thing apart, put a new one in and all that. And they said, okay. And then after that, it didn't do the weird. Yeah, it was very temperamental. It just would not crank at times and stuff. It was very, very temperamental. And then it cleared up. But that was back in the 90s. So this has been a structural flaw for decades. And it's not just an accidental loop on one model.
I mean, it is so unbelievable. So according to the claim, GM could have placed a signal protective shield around the key system to keep it in place and prevent it from disengaging, thereby disabling the cars. We intend to show that despite the option of a straightforward fix, GM to dismiss the solution because of the added cost involved in undertaking the voluntary recall.
Bean counters.
Bean counters one more time.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the irony is that seems like every decade you have to go through the same thing over again because they don't learn, these companies. They just always go for that bottom line, and they don't learn, and then they always get caught like this.
They never, ever learn.
I mean, if you've been doing the same crime long enough for Hollywood to have a movie about it, you're a repeat offender.
Well, if you've been doing the same thing, taking bribes long enough.
We're going to talk about our... Our illustrious,
well,
illustrious mayor.
I really didn't want to get into that, but
okay.
Because there's so much we don't know yet.
I know. But what's the big news of the week here in our little neck of the woods?
This is the big news.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and there's a lot more coming
because
he ain't been in it by himself. And I just think that he's the
tip of the little
bait on the end of the hook.
It's going to be a rough year here in the old
rough year for politicians of all stripes.
I don't know.
I'm
on the. I don't know. I'm very disillusioned these days. And so when I see, like, for instance.
You said that just when Scott Walker came up there.
Right?
I mean.
No, but for instance, for over a year now, there's been an ongoing battle with Duke. I mean, this the River Watchers, River Keepers, whatever that group is, you know, they're an environmental group, right? And they're watching these rivers. They've been fighting with Duke for years, and they had documentation of them dumping and pouring all their ash into the rivers and everything else over and over and over, and they've been denying it the whole time. And then it wasn't until this gigantic breach that then they finally go, oh yeah, well maybe. And then on top of that, while they're investigating that, or not investigating it as the case was, and that's what made the news, is that they continually not there's been no fines or anything from McCrory's administration. But this latest bit was, you know, then they sent some of these riverkeeper guys out there with, you know, cameras and stuff and filmed them
doing it,
pumping just millions of gallons into the rivers. And so then now they're like, oh, you know. And the part that bothers
51 million, is not fact.
Yeah, but the part that bothers me is that it's been going on for years. McCrory still... It's not even issued, you know, any kind of, you know, slap or anything. I mean, he just says, oh, you know, it'll be a thing. They need to, you know, everybody get off their back. Well, let the wheels of, justice grind in there, you know, where. And then on top of that, you've got the fact that same crew that went up and filmed them recently, when they were trying to get to the site, they were stopped by state troopers and everything, all of them. So the state is actively being paid to protect and block this from the public. Because when they went to the river originally, suddenly there's policemen all along the banks going, get out of the river. And they were like, what are you talking about? This is a public river. And they're like, don't proceed up river. You can turn the boat around. Now, give me your IDs. All this kind of stuff. Are you kidding me? So when you're using the mechanism of state to block knowledge and
well, that's federal offense.
Well, but see, this is the thing. It's been going on for a year and all there. This poor guy here in our town, he was gone 8 hours. Gone. Boom. So I have doubts that a lot will happen when they control Senate.
Well, right. House. Statewide. But you see, you're absolutely correct. On a state level, but you see, they have now violated the federal level. They have crossed over the Rubicon.
That's true.
Where the air, see, they were all right when no one saw them do it.
Yeah.
Now that they have actually have film of them with a truck sucking it out of here
and
pouring it over there, it is now a violation of the Federal Clean Air Act
and
water. So it's out of their hands now. Holder wants it. He's got it.
You know, the mayoral event that we're not going to cover, but the FBI, you know, in that thing, they had houses, rooms, businesses, everything else set up, all with the cameras.
I guess he never saw American Hustle, huh?
Yeah. But the thing that cracks me up the most about that is that, you know, they said it started when he was on the council, then he moved into the mansion office. But anyway, they gotten word that there was some corruption going on, started looking into it, right? And, you know,
what word?
You know, people aren't doing anything alone, you know. But in that vein, what you were just talking about, I bet there's a lot of politicians in North Carolina of both stripes that didn't sleep this last weekend.
And not sleeping for another couple of years.
Are
saying,
but
hey,
I bet they're laying
is my passport in order?
They're laying in a really cold, damp bed.
Absolutely.
Because now they know that all those rooms and all those meetings and all those little trips, like this trip,
we're all bugged.
Vegas. Yeah. Uncle Sam was going, come on, there's a free ticket for you, my friend. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting.
What's that? One guy said that he looked good in an orange tie. He'll look better in an orange jumpsuit. The problem is.
The thing that really, here's the one last thing I'll say about our poor mayor. I was reading that whole, you know, all the indictments and all the everything else. And I like the
50 years.
One line where he, you know, where they got Ray Nagin down in New Orleans when they indicted him, when they called him FBI in that sting.
Mm-hmm.
The next day he called him and he was like, he said, I don't have the money back. I don't really want to. I changed my mind. I don't want to have any appearance of doing anything, blah, 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 blah. And so they said they thought he was backing out. But then, like, 2 or 3 months later, he came back and said he needed some more money. So then they went, ha-ha, I got him. He's on the hook. So he had that moment of clarity where he knew he better stop. And he hung himself. So, but, yeah, somebody told me, they said, oh, my gosh, 50 years, they won't get into that. It won't be 50 years. I said, he would be getting leniency or anything else. I said, the bad thing is, you know, he can't really roll over on anybody. He is the man.
No,
but
no, no.
The bad
no.
thing is.
That's the case.
No, but even if you have it, he'll be going away for a good 20
no,
years.
No, he is the little fish. He's going to roll over guaranteed, especially if they get his wife. Because if his wife took any of that money and didn't put it on her income tax,
yeah.
It is... Al Capone-ville. Al
Capone-ville. The 1%. Remember that? Let's just
we better make 1%. Sure that was him and not her asking for that 1%.
I think they're better now because she's been named. So.
Well, yeah, but they said they did not know if it was him asking for her.
Right.
So the thing is that it don't matter. He's not the big fish. He is not the big fish. If he was the big fish, he would have been gone in 2010.
Yeah.
Why take 4 years to have him just take money?
That's
true. And that's completely illogical. He was on the hook because they knew there were other fish to fry in this frying pan. And they're going to squeeze that 50 years down to 20 so he can get out.
This one person being indicted, up to 20 people being indicted.
I'm telling you.
Oh, there's some sweating going on.
And so if it's 50 years, you squeeze it down to 20 years, and you do 80%, that's 16 years he can get out.
Mm-hmm. You know, when I read this comment on...
There'll only be 63.
I was looking at I forget if it was Huffington Post or one of these things, was talking about this, and then all the comments under it, I was browsing through comments, and one lady was saying, well, why did it take them so long, and why did they let us waste our time on an election? Is this that? Yes,
because.
You know, yeah, but one of the comments that I like is that, you know, purportedly he knew or had worked with the FBI, and his comment was, what do you want? Have you ever seen an FBI investigation? He said, he's a molasses. It's faster.
That's right. And the reason is because when the FBI goes in after you, you're already 90% in the jail. They have already fit you out with your jumpsuit already.
They just want to fill out the other 40.
All that's all it was. It was just filling out the paperwork that took them 2 years to do.
And that was the dots.
And that's you are convicted when they go after you.
Yeah.
That's the reason why
Chris Christie
is going down.
Yeah.
And if he don't go down, the other people that he's going to get are going to get 175 years, and they will be squeezed so hard, they will tell what kind of shaving cream Chris Christie uses.
Mm-hmm. And that's why all of these guys are suddenly talking about resigning for years.
Absolutely.
But that's why I like my wife was that she said, when it first happened, she called me, she said, have you heard? Did you hear about the mayor? Oh, my gosh. You know, and I was like, yeah. And she said, what do you think is happening? Will he stay in power this way? I'm like, there's no way. Hey, he's just gone. But I said, if he has any even shred of dignity, he'll resign by tomorrow. And he did, thank God, because there was no way. Because like you said, he's already, there's no hire a lawyer and get out. There's no plausible.
And he's got a fabulous lawyer, too. But, hey, that's Ferguson, but the problem is that...
They're sliding the envelope of $40,000 across the desk with 14 cameras on you in the mayor's office. I'm pretty sure you're gone. It doesn't matter what you do.
So the thing is, what does he have to give up?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you, he's the longest-serving public official in Charlotte history.
Really?
Yes. Since he was 22 years old, 23.
That's a real shame.
So he knows everything that's ever going on here.
That's like almost the perfect target. Wait a minute, Mike.
You think?
Man.
When they found out it was him, they said, we're taking it all down. Mm-hmm. Hey, they remember, couldn't get Al Capone on one murder rap, but they got him on income tax.
Mm-hmm.
He ain't Al Capone, but he might know some Al Capones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I imagine also that, just saying, if the word on the street was, hey, if you want to invest in this area, you got to grease that wheel. If I was these businessmen in this area, all these developments been going in for the last couple of years.
The last 20 years.
Sweating blood right now.
Because he knows them all.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of these guys. How do they get in there? How do they get this and that?
Well, you know the public outcry over, like, for instance, why do we have to move the stadium from here to here and build a new one and dynamite the old one and all that kind of stuff? You know, things like that. Just, you know, you never know. You never know. Start pulling those threads.
How about the airport?
Yeah.
Going out of the airport's regional, out of the hands that normally operated for the last 30 years, wanted to go into a tri-state. Tri-county.
Well, but here's the thing, and this is what irritates me about this with the Republicans. They will use this mayor's corruption as more proof or leverage or excuse that they...
The problem is, though,
do things like this.
I don't think that's going to happen.
No,
but the simple reason is because Half of them are probably tied up in it.
Oh, I know.
They're going to be going down with him. They're going with him. These guys are going with him.
So you're saying like it's a giant drain plug?
It is just...
The whole tub is going down?
The whole tub, the chain has been pulled out of the tub, and it's going down
it's
the drain.
And swirling.
Swirling in circles, okay. Right. And it comes to the drain right there in the trap is the FBI.
Wow.
That's really like a giant shark.
Well, here's the thing. As just a citizen of this county and this city, I really like Charlotte, and I'm very disappointed that this happened because this guy had potential. This guy had charisma.
The one thing he's always told me, and I know quite well, he wanted to be mayor more than anything in life.
Well, there you go.
141 days worth. Last time I saw him at a state executive committee meeting, and I said, because I interviewed him when he was running.
Yeah,
we had him on a show, two-part series.
He's a nice guy. He's a bright guy.
And
it's just a shame to
I said, hey, you're supposed to be back on my show when you won. He said, nah, I saw you. I'm so busy. Look, it would be better after my first 100 days. Then I can give you my 100-day report, and you come in my office. You'll interview me in my office. I said, fabulous.
Yeah.
It went past that, and I got busy. I got sick. I never had a chance to go speak to him. There ain't no chance now.
Oh, there's a chance. You can go down to the
I'm sure.
And talk to him for the next 20 years. I bet he'll be glad to talk to somebody.
No.
Because, that really big guy. That
where's the federal? Where's the federal? Penitentiary? It ain't here. Leavenworth, Kansas. Is there one in Georgia? Maybe.
I'm pretty sure there's one right here, and you just don't know.
there's one in Franklin County, I know. So, you know, hey.
Oh. Yeah.
So, yeah, but.
Hey, speaking of. Now, see, let me just play Understand the World for a minute. Again, here's a mayor. As soon as he does his deed, they go, snap, ha-ha. And then over here you got, you know, the good old boys with their billboard proclaiming the KKK is in town and you're going to love the cross burning. Come on down with your marshmallows. And nobody does anything. And even when we ask for help with this poor child that's lost in prison, nobody wants to show up because they say, they're going to hurt us. They're going to kill us. Then do something. And you know, where are the feds? And where are the other people? Why can't we bring something like that down? And one thing that kind of has some credence is every once in a while people say, you know, they go after big fish. They don't go after small fries. And, you know, he's just a sheriff, whereas this guy's a mayor, and that guy's a governor, and that guy's a senator, and things like that. But there's got to be justice that's equal in this country. And it kind of makes me sad.
Is it?
Is it? That's true. Is it? That's a horrible question.
Justice blind. Is justice blind? Huh? What do you think?
Well, I'd have to say, given the fact that we continually have things like Jethro Franklin out here, and and, you know, things like that going on in this country year after decade after, you know, assassination after everything else. I kind of get frustrated and bleak about it. But I like to be an idealist and believe that it is, and that this is a fair and equal country.
Well, I'm glad you believe in the fairy godmother theory.
Yep.
Yeah, speaking of Rumsfeld.
Now,
what do you think about Mr. Rumsfeld? I think he's one of the great geniuses of world politics in the 21st century.
Yeah, he and Ashcrack were right up there.
Say it again.
Oh, I'm sorry, John Ashcroft.
Oh, right. That's the guy. Yes,
no.
I sort of said that.
Don Rumsfeld, you know, wasn't he the one that never sat down?
Right.
He stood, you know, he had the chairs taken out of his office. So he
is that right?
Yeah. You know,
I didn't know that. No.
More imposing, more this, more that, and more healthy, you know, for him to stand all the time at the Pentagon. But what a tool, man. This is the same guy. You know, you want to talk about equal justice in this country and equal application of the law. Well, Mr.
equal application of the law.
Somebody went in there, like a reporter or something, interviewing him one time, and then saw behind him, he had some treasures from Iraq sitting on the on the bureau behind him. And then they pointed it out. Hey, oh, that was a gift. Then they had to give it back to Iraq. You know, so there's over there looting. You know,
he's over there looting.
That guy get any, you know, anything other than a slap wrist about it, and he's caught on camera, you know, with some illegal artifacts. But, I mean, hey, we're talking about people who are waterboarding on camera and letting, you know, dogs eat inmates, so whatever. You can't get much more criminal.
Donald Rumsfeld said that the President of the United States...
The President of the United States of America?
The President of the United States of America.
I'm sorry. I just felt...
He said the President of the United States of America is not as smart as a monkey or a gorilla or something. I forgot what was that he said.
He said that...
Dumb as an ape. Smart as an ape. That's
trained
what
ape.
Trained ape. Oh, at least he said trained ape.
Trained ape.
At least he said trained ape. Yeah. Yeah. Trained ape could do a better job than Obama.
I just want to point out, this is part of the administration who shredded anyone who criticized their mission accomplished leader.
Right.
You know, who they were building, the great war leader, the one who won, the one who dominates the world.
Right.
He who leads, and we must follow. Even if you were, say a pop country singer.
Pop country singer.
And you go, I'm kind of embarrassed to be from a state with Bush. He's so criminal and violent. Lying. Even that was enough to get you death threats, and they tried to get their label to drop on, get their... CDs banned for sale in America. So you think about that, and then you think about the respect that this isn't just Joe Blow and the trailer park down south where you could at least expect something ignorant to fly out of his mouth. This is the former Secretary of Defense of the United States of America saying to the sitting Commander-in-Chief of America, a trained ape could do better. And I wonder where the respect and the dignity in this country is going. It's just unbelievable. And just turn it around. What if, let's say, the leader of the Black Panthers had gone on TV and said, George W. Bush is, you know, a trained ape could do a better job, or something like that. And the guy would have probably... barely finished speaking before the Secret Service and everybody else had, like, you know, run over him three times in a car and then dragged his body all the way back down to the Texas road where they drag bodies. You know, Jasper, where was that? But it bothers me when you can have supposedly dignified leaders of the country, like Don Rumsfeld, say something so abysmal and just smirk and walk away.
Well, here's the thing. He said, we have status force agreements with over 125 countries of the world, and he can't get a status force agreement with Afghanistan, who was one of our major partners in the entire world. We were so great. Karzai was so wonderful for us. Oh, yeah. Okay. So before we went into Afghanistan, in the last few years, all the daggone narcotics trade had to come out of Mexico because the Taliban killed every single person and their families that were producing poppy.
Right. They had reduced the open.
They
rate
got
to zero.
Got practically zero.
And then when we went in,
but when we went in there,
with,
we said
with
Bush and Karzai,
they became the number one opium.
Mexico lost
in
it
the world.
In the world.
And let me, the people who don't understand this, Afghanistan is not a greatly developed country.
Yeah.
It's a landlocked bunch of mountains. It's part of the Hindu Kush situation. There's not a lot of
nothing.
Yeah, well, okay. So we went in. We even had to build the air bases and everything. You remember we had to build the landing ships and everything because we
had to build a road.
Ships there weren't our airplanes. You know, took up too much runway because
didn't have grass.
They had like you know rutted lanes and stuff. So we built fortresses one into the other. We built roads. We repaired all the pipelines. We put in airports, everything else, and we had iron fist on that country. You know, we controlled the borders. We had the airspace. You remember, nothing could fly over. There's no air force. Nothing.
Right.
And yet, somehow.
Somehow.
These medieval-level farmers who go out with their yak and grow a field of poppies are able to airlift it to New York City. What the hell? On their what? Akbar's flying carpet?
Yes.
What the hell? They were exporting tons per month, and we don't know how or where or why. And meanwhile, Karzai built, what, six palaces or something for himself? You know,
and he says that, Karzai was so nice to us. He was our man over here. He kept things going, and we can't make an agreement with him. And he said, that's why the Ukraine is like it is, because who respects us when we can't even take care of, who's going to believe us? You know, like, what the hell do we need Ukraine for? Why am I going to send my grandchildren over to the damn Ukraine? First of all, I like the idea what the president said. He said the Russians are a regional.
No, I love that.
A regional outfit. And they are.
Yeah.
They're regional. They have no power outside of their region. They're not controlling anything anymore.
You know, the best thing you can ever do to the little
is say that.
Complex bully on the block is just to point out
just say, hey.
How incredibly short on the ruler.
Right.
His hand is in his jacket. So it's so funny that he said that.
It cracked me up. It's just like the Korean version.
We have reasserted the Soviet Empire.
Right, I rescue alligators.
Your original power, yeah.
Yep.
It's like you've almost secured a city and its county. Congratulations.
Yeah, I rescue alligators. The ones in the zoo. Because they don't have alligators there, Russia. He gets them in the zoo after they tranquilize and wrestles them. The thing is that Afghanistan, we never should have interfered in their internal affairs. We should have got that mutt bin Laden.
Who? Let me remind people, Obama did get and the.
But he couldn't do it until he got into office.
Well, and the fantastic.
And that was within his first year of office, right? Second year?
The Bush-Karzai brilliant friendship spearheaded by Rumsfeld couldn't find the guy in 8 freaking years. Just saying. Go ahead.
And it was, what, 2 years that he got?
Yeah.
So,
by the way,
as Cheney says, we were on the road to get him. He just, what Obama did was, is just follow up the leads that we had put in place for him because we waterboarded and got him. And meanwhile, every single thing, everything that points it out says nothing. This man was not gotten, not one major fugitive was gotten by waterboarding.
Oh.
And
that's what, if you look at his success record, Obama's been incredible. He's taken out the entire top leadership.
The top.
The entire Al-Qaeda organization. Not just one. He's taken them all out.
And, you know, the thing is that and I do not care about he's using drones to do it. I'd rather him use drones than any more of our young, vital troops. I mean, I don't want them over there.
Instead of invading the whole country.
Absolutely.
Sitting there,
you know, and the problem is that this happens in war. Mm-hmm. When you had Dresden, we kill. How many people did we kill in Dresden?
The firebombing.
How many people?
God, that's
how many people we killed in Hiroshima? I mean, when you have war, people die. It's as simple as that. You can't say, oh, I'm sorry, I can't shoot the bomb over there because that moron's behind you. Well, these morons are going to stay behind people, so you can't shoot at them.
Yeah.
You can't play that game. And let me tell you something about Mr. Wilkerson,
the
adjutant for Secretary of State Colin Powell, who talks about Mr. Rumsfeld and his waterboarding.
25,000 people to death in Dresden.
Yeah, well, there it is. I'll tell you. All right, here's what Colonel Wilkerson said. Oh, wait a second.
Former Defense Secretary said this to Bill O'Reilly on Fox. Here it is.
People are equating waterboarding with torture, and I think that's a mistake. The President of the United States authorized the waterboarding. It was done to three people by the CIA, not by the military, and it produced an enormous amount of very, very valuable intelligence information.
It just amazes me how former Bush administration officials are out on the beaten path on the cables just saying it just did everything for the country. Your thoughts on that?
Well, my former boss, Colin Powell, recently said that Donald Rumsfeld was delusional and deceptive, and he could prove both points. My former boss is right. And on this issue, Donald Rumsfeld is more delusional than deceptive probably than any other. First of all, his last statement about hordes of intelligence is preposterous. It didn't produce hordes of intelligence. In fact, I never saw any raw intelligence pass my desk that came from such things, that was actionable, that really led to any circumstance at all that produced a result that was positive. Secondly, Donald Rumsfeld only has as knowledge what his bureaucracy gave him. And he wasn't there. He wasn't at the site. Multiple tiers of bureaucracy gave him the information that he has. And he made damn sure that that bureaucracy was sycophant. Yes men, yes women. He made sure that the people working for him told him what he wanted to hear. So one has to expect that Donald Rumsfeld heard what he just said, and that was that actionable intelligence was produced by these procedures. It's preposterous. And let me say one last thing. As Christopher Hitchens said after he was actually waterboarded, this is torture, changing his view. Let me waterboard Donald Rumsfeld, and then we'll see if he says it's torture or not.
Why do you think Rumsfeld is doing this? Is he acting?
He's got to. He's got to cover his rear end. I mean, there are cases in foreign countries right now being worked by lawyers there. One in Switzerland actually kept President George Bush from visiting Switzerland, that will, under international auspices, bring cases against Cheney, Rumsfeld, Fife, Addington, et al. These people don't dare resort to anything other than defending their positions, because ultimately, even within their lifetimes, they may be subject to litigation. I will predict that, as I've said many times before, they will not travel, except perhaps to Israel and Saudi Arabia. Those will be the only two countries Cheney, Rumsfeld, and others will travel to.
Lawrence Wilkerson, Colonel, we'd love to have you on the program. You do tell it like it is. I appreciate your time tonight. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Telling it like it is. I also want to remind people of this. This bothered me. Right after 9/11, you know, we had the hoopla of, you know, let's go get them.
Let's get them.
All right. But then, not 6 months later, despite everything, you know, they want to talk about, oh, well, Obama just got him because of all the stuff we did.
Mm-hmm.
No, Bush came out. You remember. Here's the tape out right here. I ain't going to play it, but that's him right here.
Yeah. And?
March 13th, he says, doesn't matter. When people are complaining, why haven't you got him? Why aren't you even trying? He says, yeah, it doesn't matter. He said he wasn't concerned about Bin Laden at all. He said we haven't heard much from him. I wouldn't even necessarily say he was even at the center of the command structure. Again, I don't know where he is, and I'm not even concerned about him anymore. Maybe he's on the run. This is the President of the United States just 6 months after 9/11, where our buildings came down, and he used that as the excuse to go, you know, conquering worldwide. But then 6 months later, he can't even muster a, I don't know, maybe he's on the run. I don't know. And then said another statement. He said, I used to be concerned about him when he was taking over a country. I was concerned about the fact that he was basically running Afghanistan and calling the shots for the Taliban. But then once we set out our policy and started to execute our plans, he became, well, we just shut him out of the way and more to the margins, and he's got no place to train his al-Qaeda killers anymore, so it doesn't matter. You know, so...
And what year is that, 2003? No, 2012? 2002.
Right after. That's 6 months after. Now, this is Bush himself, you know, the great hero, and these are the, you know, the ones that Rumsfeld and Rustam are sitting here, you know, defending and saying that they're the heroes and they're the ones that did things. Now, they sat around for 8 years. This is the guy who, the leader, the commander-in-chief saying, we don't care, maybe he's on the, I don't know, who knows, maybe he's on the margin, you know, and then they're sitting around here complaining about Obama. You know, when Obama went into office, he destroyed al-Qaeda, literally.
Oh, yeah.
The only functional al-Qaeda now is a pop-up secondary branch that has come up in Syria, in the Middle East. That's the only functional al-Qaeda in the globe now. They had to farm out everything because the entire leadership's gone. There's nothing left in Afghanistan at all, you know. So they may have a model that other people use and a name, but there's no actual al-Qaeda left because he eliminated the leadership.
I mean, you know, it's just so outrageously, it's just so outrageous that people can just, you know, how people can just go on and say these things constantly and constantly and constantly, and people will not change their belief system. What do you have to be hit in the head to see what the hell is going on around you? And it's just like to stay here.
Even if you can't stand Obama, even if you think he's a failure as a president, all these types of things and all this, when is it right? I was talking about earlier about simple dignity. When is it right for a former secretary in our government to turn around, and this is Secretary of Defense, they make it even more egregious, but to turn around and call the sitting president, the commander-in-chief, of all armed forces, and we're in active war still. And
yeah.
A talking ape could be a trained ape or whatever. It's so insulting. And, of course, we didn't even got into, but as usual, you know, he didn't say, he's as prickly as a cactus that way.
Yeah.
You know, no, he had to use the ape thing. And
right.
The thing. So it's got the whole...
Oh, but that means nothing, all that. You're misinterpreting. Right. You're misinterpreting.
You have no idea.
You know,
the Republicans often show up in, you know, blackface. But see, it just bothers me, the lack of respect and the cheapness of it.
Well, we haven't seen nothing yet. We got a state here with two houses that are taking us down as clown Representative Braun in the who's the head of science, says, to the pits of hell.
Yeah.
That's what's going on. We got a call right here. Yes.
Me.
Hello, caller. Who's this? Hello,
hey,
caller.
Michael. This is Larry Bull.
How are you? Doctor. Good. Doctor, this is our chairman of the Democratic Party, Randy Vola. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. So what's going on today on the Michael Watson show?
The problem is, here's what we have. What are we going to do if we lose the Senate in the United States and don't win the House?
It's not a prospect that we really want to be facing. Unfortunately, it's potentially a prospect that we could have to deal with. We're going to have to. All we can control is pushing it and pushing our vote out to reelect Senator Hagan in this state. That's the only control we really have here in North Carolina.
Well, if the senator wins here, there is a very good chance we will keep the Senate.
Yes, it could come down to Senator Hagan's race.
And I think that, and I'm getting so many calls from people, oh, the senator shouldn't do this, and the senator shouldn't do that, and the senator shouldn't do this. She needs to do more of that, and she needs to do more of this. And, you know, I agree with them, that I don't agree with them. The thing is that these people aren't running for office. And they don't know what it is every single day, what she has to do to get things done. Can you give a little explanation to some of the people out there about what needs to be done in this atmosphere we have in this state today?
Sometimes you have to pivot.
Needs to be done in what regards, Michael?
As far as... what you're standing for in the state and what programs you want to support. Well, we got people saying that the senator, she no longer supports the programs that I want. And we got other people saying, well, she's doing what she needs to do to win. This is what I'm saying.
I think the complicated politics have become very complicated on what people want people to run on and believe in what they actually have to do to run on and win.
Right.
This is the problem with the money. As we all know, the problem with Citizens United and big money in politics. But look, if you have a strong values-based campaign, and this starts from the strength of the parties, and for a long time there's been a weakening in the Democratic Party, because we have spent, in my view, too much time chasing the right further to the right, and people have gotten confused as to what our values are, what we stand for. If the party is strong and can, you know, resonate with the voters, our values, that's the base that the center has to turn out, and then, you know, we'll deal with getting to the unaffiliated voters that are going to vote on the basis of single issues or totality of values. Unfortunately, I think the problem is that consultants get in the game and they start advising people, you know, you need to do this, you need to do that. It's a 50-50 state in North Carolina, so, you know, we got to be very careful about how you position yourself. And they forget that, you know, a good chunk of the base of support for the senator is going to come out of the Democratic Party. You know, if you don't animate that base to come out, you can't win. This is an off-year election. So we already know that in an off-year election, we're starting with a deficit with the millennial vote. I mean, if you looked at the most recent stats that they put out, in presidential years, that 18 to 29-year-old vote is about 21% approximately of the vote. But in an off-year election, it falls to 12%. Why? Well, because older people tend to vote year in and year out, especially older, whiter people.
Right.
So that vote's not going away. And therein lies the thorny problem, not just for Senator Hagan, but for any Democrat on the ballot across the country where you're in a battleground state, where you're trying to essentially push out the coalition that elected President Obama.
Well, you know, the thing is that we've had a major look at what happens when people, and there's many reasons, I guess, in 2010 why you say people didn't come out, but we're in the position right now because people did not come out. So
right.
Why don't they see that? I mean,
here's, Michael, what we need to be doing. We need to stop engaging in arguments with that 35% of the electorate that aren't going to listen to us anyway, because
that's
if
correct.
You say the sky is blue, they'll say the sky is red.
Right.
If you say, you know, universal health care is going to be great and help your family, they'll claim it's a, you know, a socialist communist plot and reject it. We can't
right.
spend any more time with those people. We have to go to that vote you just put your finger on, the folks that are the low-information voters that turn out every 4 years and say, look, look, family member, look, cousin, look, friend, I know that you're not that interested because you only get excited during presidential years, but you got to be interested every single year. And you've heard me say this every time I come on the program. That's the folks we got to talk to.
Yeah.
That, you know, and if we're having that dialogue about why it's important to get involved and vote in your community, we can win the election. We just can't waste any more time arguing with these people that want to tell you they hate the Affordable Care Act and they don't even have the facts.
Well, that's it. And they don't have
our time.
And they don't have insurance.
No. Did you guys happen to watch MSNBC last night, one of the shows? They had this nutty woman on there from Americans for Prosperity.
Yes.
And
yes.
She caught on and said this thing that was insane. She started screaming at the host and then said, well, you know, they have some rider that if they allow you to have a 30% more than what would be considered a family of four, that would be the poverty line in Pennsylvania. And she threw out some figure of $94,000. Would be the household income, which was A, ridiculous, B, she doesn't know how to do math, and C, the figure actually was $29,000.
Right, absolutely.
And I wanted to call in and say, if the state actually allows you to be considered impoverished making $94,000, I'm moving there tomorrow.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's like,
you see, it's the same thing what they said about that Obamacare was going to euthanize old people. I was talking to someone today about that at 12 o'clock today, and they said, you mean they said that it's in there? He said, I didn't see it in there. I said, because it ain't in there.
But you still have people just last week saying that at the national level. So they keep throwing those terms out there all the time to confuse and mislead and to, you know, fill up their base.
Well, but you know, even after all that, my thing is, how much does it have to hurt for you to remember that 2010 you did not go out and vote, and now the state and house in this state are controlled by these right wingers? How much more does it have to hurt?
Your calendar says 1860.
And your calendar is going to say 1860 because before they're through, women will not be able to use the pill. Women will not have the right to work. Blacks will not have the right to vote.
Well, to answer your question, Michael, on that point, they know from the center, from the right wing, that when they play cynical games and they use false equivalencies in their arguments, they depress people and they make people less likely to want to engage in the civic process. And you'll hear these kind of things like, they're all the same. You know, politicians are all dirty. Everyone's the same Republican. And generally, you know, from the unaffiliate voter over to the Democratic side, our people affected by that cynicism than their people are. That's why their whole game is to suppress turnout.
And I got to ask you that. Why are our people more affected by that? I know, I just can't understand it. You know, I don't know, maybe it's just me. Why, if someone tells me, no, you got lying eyes, that's not what you're seeing. I mean, I don't understand that. I'm completely clueless.
Yeah, well, the whole thing of you're hurting,
right,
everything is bad, the economy's down,
right.
You don't have any, you know, so give up.
Yeah, give up. I mean, I don't understand that.
To fight harder?
Well, whatever happened to fight harder to get what you want?
That's a good question.
I mean, why do you give up? Why do you give up? I just don't understand it. And say, well, everybody's the same. All right, everybody's the same. Okay, but you know what? If everybody was the same, were you better off 2 years ago when the Republicans didn't control the House and the Senate, or are you better off now that you don't have a precinct to go to because your precinct is now moved across town and you can't vote on Saturday and you got to vote before 7 o'clock? I mean, I don't understand that. It's going to be the same. And,
well,
am I being too cruel? I mean, well, what's the story here?
I mean, look, we just got a real-world example of this in Charlotte. They spent 2 years trying to entrap the mayor of Charlotte, I mean, while he was on council. They entrapped him. You know, I'm not excusing anything that Mayor Cannon did. You know, it was for, you know, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands or maybe $1 million in our taxpayer money was spent on this ridiculous operation.
Mm-hmm.
The total that I saw here, what, $48,000?
Right.
That goes on. Right, and it's something simple that people can understand, right? It's boiled down and simple. But we're sitting here in a city that's the number two financial center in the country where one of the major banks in town was involved with the financial meltdown. Has anyone been frog marched out of headquarters for that? No, because they say the cases were too complicated to make. How many people lost their houses? How many people lost jobs? How many people lost all their equity? You get my point? Duke Power is based there. They just polluted the heck out of the Dan River. Is anyone getting frog marched out there? Are there any stings being done there?
Well, we're talking about
no.
that. We're talking about that before you got on. Well, you know, the thing is, we're talking about...
This
now,
is what helps make people apathetic, because they see that it's not fair.
Yeah,
they
but life ain't fair. I was not born with $1 million in my daggone crib with me. That would be fair, as far as I'm concerned. So life is not, and anybody who thinks life is fair needs to be put under with their head under a MRI scan because they got something loose. You know,
I'm trying to say about that point, Michael, is this: that Mayor Cannon's crimes, again, I'm not excusing what he's allegedly accused of, are analogous to the guy that robs the liquor store and there's $70 worth of crime and he spends 10 years in jail, but the guy that basically shut down Wall Street, you know, Enron, it took him forever to convict those sons of guns, right? Who's really the bigger criminal? The one that cost 80,000 people their jobs? Probably a lot of people became alcoholics for that. All kinds of horrible things happened. Or the poor staff that just, you know, went in and robbed the store for $70 and he gets 10 years.
Well,
that runs a store is an easy crime to understand, and our system can, in black and white, can like, okay, that's bad, we're going to convict you. But there's all kinds of these gray area crimes going on all around us, and it's those gray area crimes that create a cynical environment that makes a lot of our electorate not want to be involved because they claim everyone's the same. And so when we have an example like happened yesterday in Charlotte, it plays right into that cynicism, which we cannot allow to have happen. That's my two cents on the matter.
We see. But, you know, what you're talking about, what these daggone bankers, what they did, I mean, it's in the Bernie Madoff, the comparison that I wanted to make with that is what's involved now with GM and the key in the ignition. And it going off and losing in the auxiliary position to brakes, power brakes are failing, airbags are failing, and power steering is failing. It's just like that film we were also talking about today, Class Action, where they willingly knew they had a defective product, and the risk management, the Banton County said it would cost us $50 million to retrofit against $30 million worth of suits. So they went to the $50 million. They went to the risk for the $30
million. They saved money.
They saved $20 million, they estimate. Well, it's the same thing with GM right now. And it's the same thing with the bankers. I mean, it's the same exact thing.
Yeah, they said that if they went and sued all these banks and actually put them in jail and closed them down like they should have done, then the economy would have collapsed.
Right.
So they had to let them all go.
I mean, so, you know, it's just unbelievable. So, and I can understand that. Yes, it's too complicated to understand. But what I'm saying is it ain't complicated to me when my precinct, which used to be at the post office or at the school, is no longer there and I have to drive across town to the only other precinct to vote, and it closes at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock at night. That's not complicated to me. And I don't see why people can't see that. I don't see why people can't see that they no longer have unemployment insurance. I don't see that's complicated.
All right, well, I'm going to explain to you why it's why where the problem is.
Okay.
I can't hear the other gentleman on the line. I don't know if we have a connection issue. He's fading out.
You're fading out, Thomas.
Okay, sorry.
All right, can I hear you? Yeah, I can hear you better now.
Okay.
When I was speaking with the Kay Hagan campaign, her chief of staff, and we were talking about some of the focus groups they were doing with voters, developing messaging, trying to find out where people's head was, he revealed to me some fascinating things. And this is from your neck of the woods, you know, Mecklenburg County, County, Union County. So they were basically focusing on women and what you consider a lot of, you know, Democratic women, unaffiliated women, possibly some Republican women, soccer mom types, that kind of thing, in the suburbs. And it turned out, now these are folks that you know, presumably are educated, you know, they're not, their lives are such, they're not scraping to get by, so they can't really make that excuse. A large percentage of them had no idea that the General Assembly in North Carolina was run by Republicans.
What?
Yeah, no, I am quoting to you what he told me they found out, and he said, no one's ever gone broke underestimating the American voter. He also said that many of them did not know that Tom Tillis, her presumptive opponent, was the Speaker of the General Assembly, even though he's from your area, okay? They knew that there was an issue with teacher pay, but they didn't know who to blame because they weren't sure who was in control in Raleigh. Now, what does this tell you about our people?
Holy cow.
They are incredibly uninformed.
That's why we also do Civics 101 on the show and trying to educate. But it's horrifying.
Yes, I agree. I agree with Tom. We should spend, you know, 5 minutes a show just doing Civics 101. They knew there was a problem with teacher pay. Okay, back up. They knew there was a problem with teacher pay. They knew they were upset about that. They weren't sure who to blame for policy-wise because the majority of the people in these focus groups had no idea who was in charge. They still thought the Democrats were in charge. This is how uninformed our voter is. And this is why political parties, by the way, do play a role, because by and large, partisans actually tend to be more informed than, quote, unaffiliated low-information voters. They know who's in charge, for instance.
And they, right. So you're saying that these are mostly unaffiliated voters.
These were mostly, there was a small smattering of probably Democratic women, some Republican women, and mostly unaffiliated women who were probably, they were living in the suburbs in Mecklenburg and perhaps Union County. And these are folks that would be targeted by the Hagan campaign, right? And so in these focus groups, they came up woefully uninformed. I was shocked that they thought the Democrats were still in charge.
I'm shocked.
This is more proof positive of why we need to bolster education and pay teachers in this country, because people don't know jack.
And here's the thing that kills me is that we have people who are voting, and are these people who have voted in past elections or just sporadic voters? Or
I wasn't privy to the voter history, but presumably they were folks that had voted before because they're representative of a target for the center's campaign. So,
right.
You know, if they voted, how often they vote, I don't know. But, I mean, again, just because people vote
does not necessarily make them that informed. There are a lot of people that just go vote for one candidate and leave. That's why
electioneering is so important. When I've talked to folks that run boards of elections, like in my county, they can tell if there was a great electioneer, Michael Lawson's out front, you know, handing a ballot out, talking to people, they can see a spike in the number of bubbles filled in by voters based on folks working outside. If nobody's outside, somebody, you know, comes in and says, well, I've heard of Obama, or I've heard of Romney, that's all I'm voting for, right? Or I've heard of McCrory. That's the value of why you really need grassroots, and you need people out there talking to their neighbors about who to vote for and what they stand for. And that's why the political party has to stand for a durable set of values. Then people know, if I'm voting for a D, this is what I'm getting. When I'm voting for an R, this is what I'm getting. And when these fools run around and say, oh, well, we should be GOP light, you know, I want to tell them, you know, leave the party. We're not GOP light. When you do that, you dilute our brand and you confuse the voter. When I go get bourbon, I don't mix it with water. I want, you know, undiluted bourbon. So I know what I'm getting.
I do have a mint julep, which is a little bit of sweet water in it. So
you get my point, Michael. You know
I get you.
That's the reason I love Randy, right there.
We see, now, wait a minute. Here's the thing that kills me. You know, these people, a lot of people come to me and say, well, I'm not a Democrat or Republican. I'm independent. And I say, wait a minute. Right. There is no such thing as independent. I said, are you independent if you're in the electric chair? Are you a death penalty?
Look, I come from Mississippi. Those people are the ones in the pictures that are around the crime where they're, like, hanging.
Right.
I didn't hang him. I was just in the crowd.
Right, right.
And I didn't do that.
Right.
How can
there
you
is
be?
No such thing. Here's something for you guys to get a chuckle out of. So all my years serving in municipal government, as an elected official, everyone likes to tout the idea that we're nonpartisan when you run for municipal office for many of these places. Now, some places do have primaries, right? So you know who you're getting. But but most of North Carolina for school board and municipal races, they claim to be nonpartisan. We all know that's not true. It's just they don't want people to know who they are. So I was serving with these guys, and they were, you know, some of them were fairly conservative. And they'd say to me, well, Mayor, you know, you're getting involved with this Democratic politics. You know, you're really partisan. And I turned to one of my guys and I said, well, you keep coming in here quoting, Fox News at every meeting. You're pretty partisan. And then he started laughing. And I said, you knew I had him. I said, everybody has an ideology that informs your decision making. So there is no such thing as nonpartisan.
Absolutely, there is no such thing as nonpartisan. If you're nonpartisan, that means you just dropped in from Mars.
Right.
That's the only way you can be nonpartisan. You know,
you have a choice. You know, you have a preference. Everybody has a preference. The main reason that people choose to be unaffiliated is they either don't understand the political system or they're turned off by it. I won my first election as an unaffiliate. I was unaffiliated for the first 18 years of my life, but I was pretty darn partisan. I was fairly progressive. Okay, I voted for people that had my values.
Right.
I just didn't affiliate with a party. So I've always thought that's a big lie.
Yes, yeah, you're absolutely correct. You know, and the thing is that how do we get people to, not to people. I'm talking about women. Women who are nonpartisan are against their own self-interest.
That's a very good point.
Women control, they control the money of this planet, and they have more votes, more women vote than men. There's more
women
voting.
You know, in the state of North Carolina, 54% of the vote total are women who voted last election.
There it is.
So if the women decided that they wanted to actually unite on a set of values, they could elect whatever candidate they wanted.
Right.
That's right.
But they're not.
Why? Why do women want to vote against their own self-interest? How do we get all these Republican women who want to vote against birth control when 90% of the birth control that's used is because not for not having kids, but because women use this for various hormonal changes and for different things that affects their body? I mean, what's to understand about this? If I understand about it, and I'm brain dead. I mean, I don't understand this.
They should everything from education to family things to health care to everything that has been done in the last couple of years is vital to women and families. So it should be this should be the easiest election ever. Why is it difficult? That's what we need to ask. We need to
What I would say to you, Michael, is the Democratic Party should stick to three basic topics to message around, and from those topics, you can connect every other discussion point. Water, women, and work. Water is an environmental issue. There's nobody that likes dirty water or unclean water. It polls in the high 80s. We should be the party that stands for clean water, okay? And that we don't want unreasonable regulations. We want smart regulations that produce good quality drinking water, which means I don't want you fracking in my backyard, right?
Right.
Women. We should be constantly hammering on that we're the party that is good for women. And that connects to all kinds, whether it's fair pay, Lizzie Ledbetter Act, or it connects to women's reproductive health, or it connects to equality of opportunity. We're the party for women. And work. And this is the area that Democrats have traditionally fallen down on because they have not been strong about communicating this. We're the party that wants to put you back to work. What does that mean? When Obama has an ARA stimulus plan, you get behind that sucker and you make it bigger and you put your neighbors back to work. When we talk about education, that's a work program because as you educate people, they're more valuable in the marketplace. They're more likely to get paid more. The whole issue with raising minimum wage, that's a work issue. If we stick to the three W's, and every show we talk about those on your show, that's where you get the discipline to start beating these people back because Republicans cannot win on those three issues. They're bad on water, they're bad on women, and they're terrible on work. Just look at their track record.
Well, no, you're absolutely correct on that. That is, they talk about that constantly about work. They keep saying we want to have, why doesn't Obama create jobs? Well, the President of the United States don't create jobs. That's the House. The President don't create no jobs.
That's like
he creates the laws. He's not creating any laws.
Well, it's kind of ironic because they claim the government doesn't create any jobs, and then they want to talk about creating jobs. I mean, they speak out of both sides of their mouth.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I will tell you right now what the single perhaps most pressing issue for us to pay attention to is the cuts in the military, because for the longest time I've told people, we do practice democratic socialism. It's called the U.S. military and the military-industrial complex. We provide all these jobs that aren't needed. We provide health care to all these folks, and then we create a demand for them by running an empire we don't need. If you shrink the military, we're going to have hundreds of thousands of people who are trained and don't have jobs. And you know what happens when you have hundreds of thousands of trained military people loitering around.
You can believe
it's a recipe for civil unrest, right?
Absolutely.
And so I've often said that we have made a deal with the devil because we grew the military against the advice of Eisenhower to a point where it's not sustainable, and yet if we cut it back, we're going to have all these people without a job. And then what will happen?
Well,
What
we're looking at right now, I saw a report today.
Well, that's where the genius of Roosevelt comes in, and we need more national parks for them to lounge in.
That's right.
What we need is we need a WPA, a modern WPA.
That's absolutely correct. Exactly. Well, I was looking at today, there was a report, 23 vets killed themselves every single day. Suicide.
And that's not surprising, because your country drills into your head, you know, how amazing and wonderful you are and why you're doing this job serving your country, and then your country doesn't love you, you know, and the world doesn't love you, and you get shot up, and you're coming back, and you're suffering all kinds of post-traumatic stress syndrome. You've got all these injuries, and you're looking around, you're wondering, why did I do this? I'm 25 years old, and I'm taking painkillers every day. Think about
Well, see, to me, I don't care what the military has said. We didn't have this problem when we had a draft, because we would not send our children out there. And we need to have some sort of draft where it touches every one of our young children, one form or another, if not the military, but one form of government assistance to help this country, and we would have a better place than we have now. Well, and we talk about that's one of the things I've been saying for a long time.
Actually, you make a very good point, Michael, because since we went to an all-volunteer system, and we went to and generally in the all-volunteer system, it with the recruiters and the bonuses they get, it preys on the lower classes, because the only opportunity people see is, I'll join the military and I'll get 3 squares a day and I'll get training. And they'll pay for education if I'm lucky, and I'll be whole body, whole mind to do it. And without the draft, you've got this disproportionate share the burden being shared by Hispanics, African Americans, immigrants, or children of immigrants, people in the lower quartile. But also, there's another pernicious problem with this. My father was Air Force, and my dad was an immigrant. And so in one generation, he ends up an officer in Vietnam, and he was, in the era of the draft. The Air Force Academy has gone way over the bounds with, infiltration by right-wing evangelicals. Why? Because it's a self-selecting system now. As you said, it's not draft. Since you have these different groups going to different parts of the military, all on the basis of volunteerism, and the wealthier members of society can avoid service.
Yep.
So I agree with you. We are going to reap a bitter crop from this entire adventure.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, without a doubt. I mean, I was in Vietnam also, and I was drafted out of college. General Wesley Clark was in the military at the time, and over in Vietnam, and I think he was over the same time I was, as a matter of fact. The thing is, we talked about this, because I was his draft clerk campaign. I was head of the volunteers in North Carolina. We spoke about this a lot of times. That's one of the things he wanted to have. 2 years of military service or civil service for the person, if you want to go into the military, and you got 3 years of college free, paid, anywhere you wanted to go. The problem
what screwed up the system that they had going? George Bush, because George Bush pretty much wrecked everything.
Absolutely. Yep.
He the reserves and especially the Guard was never intended to do active duty 2-3 tours, in a foreign theater of war.
And you guys,
I both know that the Guard is filled with people that used to be active that went back into the Guard, or weekend warrior types that love the idea of the military, but never envisioned that they would be serving in Baghdad, right?
Right, absolutely.
And they knew that they made a bargain, and they said, I'll do this, and they generally worked on disaster relief, like hurricane and tornado relief and things like that. And Bush comes in, and he decides to invoke, this little-used rule, and he sends over all these reserve units. That decision alone really caused repercussions across our body politic.
Because a lot of these people
you're talking about killing themselves, a lot of these people are those guys.
Well, of course, you have a major job, a good paying job, that's taking care of your family, and now you're doing your fourth tour in Afghanistan. I mean, what is your prospective employer going to do? Just hold your job out forever? I mean,
my father and I were laughing and crying about the idea that until he got that piece of paper at age 59 and a half, you know, theoretically, Bush could have sent him over there to fly planes.
You're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct.
Yes.
That is right.
And I said, Dad, you're too fat to get in the cockpit. You know, you're no longer the svelte guy in those pictures flying out of Thailand, you know. But it's true, Michael. They were taking people in their 50s. Bush was a bad actor.
Well, listen. I was in the Air Force. I said, well, what'd your father, what was he in? What did he fly?
They flew KC-135s, the old refuelers. So
okay.
All of his active duty was flying over Vietnam, refueling fighters and B-52s all the way up to Hanoi. He had a lot of great stories about that. Utapal is where he flew out of. You remember Utapal?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was at Da Nang, Kara Bay, and what was the place in Thailand? I'm trying to think. That was TDY, the Arab Claw for the Philippines. But it was F-4s and 111s. The thing was that, they could fit your father in that seat. They could have fit him in that KC-135 one more time.
They could have wedged him back in. You know. So you know the deal.
Absolutely.
My dad used to say, you probably thought the same thing. He said all these guys that like to talk about their military service and wrap themselves in the flag, none of these guys ever serve. They talk about the military.
Oh,
and my dad had a damn good record, but he never wore a flag pin on his lapel or ran around. He was big on vet affairs. My dad was always big on vet affairs.
I never saw any pilot wearing a flag pin. Never.
No.
Ever.
They didn't run around wrapping the flag around them. They really didn't. And he didn't have respect for politicians that did that. He really thought that was low grade.
The only reason why George Bush did that is because, and see, you don't know the story. I know the unit.
Trying to wrap himself
right.
Other than
Well, the thing was that he was in the 102s, which when I got to Clark were replaced by the F-4s that my was over, that I came over there with my command. 102s were scrap metal, and the unit he was in was a scrap metal unit. They didn't have but two or three planes that could fly. Two or three. The rest was all and so he was never going to go over there. That man, I think that was maybe when he was on that aircraft carrier, that might have been the fourth time he ever had a flight through him.
Right.
So, you know, virtual reality, right. That's what more or less was him, was virtual reality. Right. That's all it was. But the thing is that we need... The problem that Rumsfeld did when he came in, he's the one who reduced the military. It wasn't President Obama, because his main thing is to reduce the military to a private fighting force where they would not have to pay health benefits, where they would not have to pay pensions, the movie? Right. That's right. We have more mercenaries over there right now than we have soldiers. And we always
Was actually what undermined the Roman Empire was when they went toward mercenaries.
That's correct. Absolutely correct.
That was the beginning of the end for them.
But George Bush wanted a military like Starship Troopers, the books by Nazi?
Robert Heinlein.
Right. I mean that's what he wanted. And that's what this whole thing is driving for, and that's why our soldiers are getting the raw end of the deal. My wife works at the VA right now, and she's telling me every single day what these people were told they would get and they don't get. because there's no budget for it. I mean, it's a joke. It's a joke.
Well, it's not a joke.
I mean, it's a joke what they're doing. Right. The last people.
The mental health issues alone are going to be horrific for the next 40 years.
Oh, yeah, the mental health issues. Forget it. And hey, we got 23 dying a day. I think it was, I don't know how many they figured it was, I can't remember offhand, 2,000 or something during
But wait until they're old, sick, and dead.
Yeah. Well, they're desperate right now.
No, but think about it. Give them a few decades. Yeah. It's going to be horrific.
Well, Mr. Chairman, what can you tell us that you'd like the audience to do to make sure that we can take back as much as we can in this next election?
Turn the tide.
Not a lot of time here, but I think that we need to focus on our own legislative district, our own local elections, right on up to the U.S. Senate, and start looking at who we know that we need to get out to vote in our own families and our own social networks and start prepping them to say, do you know where you're supposed to vote this election? Do we need to help you get to the polls? And make sure people are ready and prepared to vote. They got to vote for U.S. Senate right on down to their local county race. And they need to be voting for all the races, including the judicial races, and they need to be prepared. That's
yeah,
it.
Especially those district races, because if it goes
this
to
is
the,
going to be a turnout election. We got to turn out our base.
Oh man!
Simple as that. If we turn out our base, we won't lose.
What's our website so people can call in, type it in, and get some information?
Or you just type in ncdp.org, North Carolina Democratic Party. If you Google North Carolina Democratic Party, it'll put you on our website,
mm-hmm.
and it'll go right on there. And www.ncdp.org, and you can start pulling up information from there. Sign up to get our newsletters, and we'll inform you about what's going on. Support your local party, whether it's being a recurring donor for $1 a month, $10 a month, $20 a month, just support. Is your democracy worth more, more than a cup of coffee a day? I mean, folks spend money on all kinds of crazy things, but they won't spend it on the one thing that actually is going to influence their life and make sure that they have all the goods and services they need to live the kind of life they want.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really live much of a life without clean water, a place to dispose your waste, safe streets, good schools, nice parks. That's what people need to have a good quality of life. We don't have much.
Well, we had...
We ought to have like a little ad campaign that says, what's more valuable to you, a cup of Joe or a cup of goo, out of the river?
It's true. What is more valuable? These type of public investments are what actually make our life worth living. They're trying to privatize it all, so you won't even be able to step outside of your house without paying for the privilege.
I really can't believe how much this state has changed since 2010. It is like night and day. It's like going. You remember the Excalibur, the movie, where everything sort of went black.
Right.
And when you see our new executive director, Casey Mantella, I'm going to play our interview next week. And
good.
I'm looking forward to finishing up our interview because we didn't finish.
Good. We'll be back in touch.
Good. All right. So
all
I want to thank
you. All have a good weekend.
You too.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks
and
a lot.
That's
bye-bye.
The Chairman of the Democratic Party, North Carolina, Mr. Randy Vola. And
most important thing,
a lot of things he said is important.
Vote. That's the gist.
Hey.
You've got to show up and vote. If you don't, you won't have the privilege.
If you don't complain.
Well, no, you may not have the privilege again. They've already restricted the days and times, the locations, everything else,
That's true. That's true. There is no more time. You don't have any more time. It's all over.
And like you said, wait a little while longer, we won't have water to drink either. So,
Show up and vote, people.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So you're saying that bottle of water is we're going to have you living on that bottle of water?
Yeah, maybe we can get it shipped in from New Jersey.
Oh, yes. That is
nice.
Christy
Clear Water.
Christy Clear Water. That's true. We had a couple of people who were supposed to be on the show. They weren't on the show. I don't know what happened to them.
Well, you know what? It is a busy time, but we still covered a lot of ground.
We covered a lot of ground. Remember, everybody, if you want to get the show and not wait for it to come up, you can go to blogtalkradio.com/the-. That's a dash line, little dash. Last, little dash. Word, little dash. With, little dash. Michael, little dash. Lawson. And you can get the show in a few minutes.
If you go on the site. Because I've been on it. Locked on radio. Type in last word. It just pops up.
Right. But does it?
Yeah, you're talking about the actual, you know, we put in the top and the in the. Right.
Well, the.
Go to Locked on radio, look us up. Last word, Michael Lawson.
And if it's not up there, you can do the other one. And I'm going to be updating the website very, very, very quick, as soon as I can this weekend.
Because. News never stops.
Never stops sleeping. All right, everybody. Have a good weekend. Here's my song from the old days, the Dell Vikings. Come, go with me.
You never give me a chance.
Love me, darling.